It's time for Twink This Week at Google. Ant's here, Stacy, Jeff. Of course, we're going to talk about the Twitter whistleblower. How credible are his assertions? Is there something wrong with Annie Leibovitz's pictures of black people? And an image generator will turn me into art. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 678, recorded Wednesday, August 24th, 2022. Podcast legend, having lunch. This Week in Google is brought to you by Melissa. Poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million every year. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by IRL, an original podcast from Mozilla. IRL is a show for people who build AI and people who develop tech policies. Hosted by Bridget Todd, this season of IRL looks at AI in real life. Search for IRL in your podcast player. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse, the Twitterverse, the Facebookverse, really kind of the whole verse thing, all of it together. Stacy is here because it is World Waffle Day, so Stacy Higginbotham and her waffles have appeared. Actually, we have a big story for Stacy coming up. Stacy on IoT.com. She's our IoT guru at GigaStacy. Jeff Jarvis is also here, the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
And Ann Pruitt.
I wish I looked as half as good as Stacy.
Well.
And her new hairdo.
I like the new blouse.
Yeah,
I'm trying not to comment. I don't comment on appearance.
You can say your haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you don't say it, and then I automatically assume if you don't say anything, I'm like, oh, he must hate my haircut.
Oh, so
I don't assume.
See. This is why.
You can't win, Leo.
This is why men are confused. Ann Pruitt is also here with a fabulous haircut.
The best haircut.
Twit.com. All the hairs are cut.
I was inspired by you, Ant. I was like, got to get rid of that hair so I can get closer to the
So was that hard? Because I know sometimes if you have longer hair, cutting it off is hard.
No, growing my hair out's hard. I normally have short hair.
That's a really good look, though. I'm trying to think who it is. It's a style. Yeah.
What do they call it? Bobs?
It's a pixie. It's a long pixie.
Pixie. Okay. I don't know.
I want to say it's Tilda. It's very Tilda Swinton kind of.
As long as you don't say Caitlyn Jenner, because that's kind of how I feel like
it. It is not Caitlyn Jenner. No. No, that's not it at all. It's Tilda Swinton kind of.
You don't know who Harry Styles or Olivia Wilde is, but you know who Caitlyn Jenner is?
Well, of course, everybody knows who Caitlyn is.
Of course.
Yes.
Okay. All right. On to tech news.
I guess this is Tilda. It's kind of little Tilda Swinton. It's that sweep over the right brow that kind of gives it a Tilda Swinton kind of a feel. I like it.
That's Tilda right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just showing you. Yeah. Her. Her sweep.
And her cheekbones that could cut.
Oh, yeah. She's gorgeous. I love her. There was a good article recently about her and how she has, despite being kind of indie, become a real star, Oscar, BAFTA, and so forth, three Golden Globes, even though she's so indie, right? She doesn't do mainstream characters or anything, but she's so good. This is from The Guardian. She disappears or goes blank like Garbo, the enigma of Tilda Swinton.
I never watch network TV, and I was in a hotel last night, or night before last, and I ended up watching the TMZ one-hour special
on
Richard Simmons. And you wonder where this is going to go.
What happened to him?
Well, at the end, they say that he's Garbo. He just chose to leave, and that's it. He's okay.
Good. As long as he's okay.
They think so, but they don't know. They didn't know a damn thing.
He just kind of disappeared.
I've heard the same thing, that he's totally fine. He just wants to sort of be away from everything. I've heard that too.
But there but was like the rumor that it was unwillingly was disappeared as opposed to doing it on his own. And there was all these rumors.
By his family.
I just want to tell you, when I disappear, be a couple of weeks. It was my choice. I garboed. It'll be a garbo. I'm just saying.
You just wonder whether anybody will look for you.
I know they won't. That's why I'm telling you ahead of time. I'm trying to stir up some interest. Speaking of stirring up interest, Mudge. Mudge. So I remember when Twitter hired Mudge. His real name is Peter Zatko, as their security chief. And it was kind of an interesting story because Mudge was widely known as a hacker, kind of a white hat, good guy hacker. They hired him in the face of massive security problems, you may remember, breaches and so forth. And I think a lot of people said, yeah, finally, they got somebody who knows what he's doing in there. This will be good. 6 months later, he's gone.
After Jack left. Parag fired him.
Yeah, but he fired him for not doing anything. I mean, it was kind of fired for cause, it sounded like.
Well, both things in this story can be true.
We're going to get there. I want you to know the back. What led up to it, the backstory. So he was fired, it's about 6 months ago now. He was 2 years at Twitter, I think, and then fired 6 months ago.
It was 1 year.
It wasn't long. Six months later, he files what he calls a whistleblower complaint against Twitter. Now, I don't know. Is it a whistleblower if you don't work for them and they can't?
He used the same. He used the same organization for help that helped Haugen.
Okay, so it's a whistleblower complaint. The Washington Post has the exclusive because they got the complaint itself. The most serious accusation, according to the WAPO, is that Twitter violated the terms of an 11-year-old consent decree with the FTC, who said, it's a weird consent decree. You had for the next 20 years, it said. This was in 2010, so that would have gone through 2030. You will be barred from misleading consumers. After 20 years, go ahead. But for the next 20 years, you'll be barred from misleading consumers about the extent to which you protect security, privacy, and confidentiality of non-public consumer information. One of Mudge's complaints, or allegations, I guess is what I probably should call them, is that Twitter collecting phone numbers, as we've kind of known about, Facebook was accused of doing this too, collecting phone numbers and real names and other things ostensibly for account recovery was actually using that to sell ads.
And we knew that from a couple months ago.
Right. Mudge also, I'm going to call him Mudge instead of Zatko because I think he's better known as Mudge, right? He says
that kind of makes him more cuddly. I don't know.
Zatko, I know, Pita Zatko doesn't, yeah. He was a open source programmer, a hacker, a writer, pretty well known in the security community. He founded the Cult of the Dead Cow and was in Loft, which did a lot of cracking stuff. So he was a very well-known guy. He actually, 2010, started to work at DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Administration. A government position. He oversaw cybersecurity. He worked for Google after 3 years in their advanced technology and products division. In 2020, he was hired as head of security at Twitter.
There's a hilarious picture of Mudge testifying before Congress. Oh, hell, I just lost it.
In 98, as one of seven so Loft members.
His name tag says Mudge next to a guy called Kingpin.
Yeah.
You could be
sure Congress took that seriously.
Yeah.
He met with Bill Clinton at a security summit. He was a well-respected guy. He was a division scientist at BBN where the internet was invented. So he was, he's pretty well known. He was sought out by Jack Dorsey, who was the CEO at the time, to lead the company's information security approach after a big hack in July of 2020. You may remember that hack. A lot of big name accounts were co-opted, right?
Was that the one?
Yeah.
That was, yeah.
Yeah. It was the one, I can't remember, but it was all
was
those famous.
Was this the one that led to the death of the?
No, no, it was the Bitcoin one where Apple said, we're giving back to our community. We support Bitcoin.
Right. Okay.
Send all Bitcoin sent to the address below will be sent back to you doubled. And Elon tweeted it. Apple tweeted, a lot of people tweeted, that was bad. And Twitter,
a few idiots did it, but I think more for the yucks than anything else.
Yeah, but it was bad. I mean, Bill Clinton, I think, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Mr. Beast, Michael Bloomberg, Warren Buffett, Floyd Mayweather Jr., Kim Kardashian, and Kanye West, all their accounts had been compromised and tweeted that Bitcoin thing. Uber, Cash App, Apple. Twitter said that 130 accounts were affected, but only 45 were actually tweeted out that scam. And as I remember, they think it was because Mudge was able to use Slack. Not Mudge, the bad guys. Mudge came to save the day. Were you able to get into a Slack account and get the credentials? Remember, we talked about this. Get the credentials for an administrative account, which allowed them to do this. Anyway, it was such a black mark that Twitter hired him. But then, you know, when he was let go, it was because he didn't do a good job. He was, you know, he was causing problems.
Were they public about that, or that's come out now in his allegations?
I don't think that's a good question.
About why they fired him. I don't remember that.
Let me see if I can find that story.
Because there were two executives fired at the same time.
Yeah. Let me just Google Twitter fires Mudge. all those stories are the current story, unfortunately. Oh, here it is.
Yeah,
Twitter shakes up its security team. And this was the story we read in January of this year on this show, because it's been visited already. Peter Zatko, head of security, no longer at the company Twitter, confirmed. Chief Security Officer Rinky Sethi was also fired following, quote, an assessment of how the organization was being led and impact on the top priority work. Let me see if they have anything else. Anyway, I think this background information is important because I think you need to understand this, that he was fired in January. 6 months later, he does this whistleblower thing. I feel ethically bound, said Zatko. This is not a light step to take. He declined to discuss what happened at Twitter except to stand by the formal complaint. Under SEC whistleblower rules, he is entitled to legal protection against retaliation as well as potential monetary rewards. However, he's not guaranteed to be believed, right? Everything is alleged, and this begins an investigation.
Mm-hmm. Casey Newton said in the piece that he wrote that he heard from people, you know, who were Mudge's fans, but he said, I had an equal number of people calling me and telling me, but you can't use this story, and then telling him a story about Mudge. Yeah. So he has his fans, he has his detractors, don't we all? But,
yeah.
But you know, grain of salt.
Agrawal, the CEO, says, wait a minute, I want to get all of the whistleblower complaint in now, and then we'll talk about the merits of it. It says that thousands of employees still had wide-ranging and poorly tracked internal access to the core company software. Remember, that was part of the problem that allowed this hack 2 years ago, a situation that for years led to embarrassing hacks, including the commandeering of accounts held by such high-profile users as Elon Musk, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump. In addition, the whistleblower document alleges, this is all from the Washington Post, the company prioritized user growth over reducing spam. Are you surprised? Though unwanted content made the user experience worse. And he says it's because executives stood to win individual bonuses of as much as $10 million tied to increases in daily users, but no rewards for cutting spam. He says the CEO, Parag Agrawal, was lying when he tweeted in May that the company was, quote, strongly incentivized to detect and remove as much spam as we possibly can. Zatko told the Post in an interview that his decision to go public was an extension of his previous work, exposing flaws in specific pieces of software. I felt ethically bound, said Zatko. That's that quote. A redacted version of the 84-page filing went to congressional committees. That's how the Post got it. So they got the redacted version. Zatko is represented by a nonprofit law firm called Whistleblower Aid. The FTC is also reviewing the allegations. So, stirred up a hornet's nest. And the chiefly among those, besides the fact that it lacks security, was this whole thing about bots. And this is why I get a little suspicious, because apparently, according to the Post, Elon Musk, before the whistleblower accusations, had subpoenaed Zatko to testify in the trial, which is coming up in Delaware in October. Zatko had accused Twitter of lying about bots to Elon Musk. To me, that's pretty damn convenient. And
very. Can I explain the Masnick angle?
Yeah. So
on this?
Mike. So let's go now to Techter, where Mike Masnick's headline is: Twitter whistleblowing report actually seems to confirm Twitter's legal argument while pretending to support Musk's. Yeah, you better explain that.
So what Mike explains in a Bible length post, it goes into much, much detail, is that number one, this still isn't a factor in the case, because again, let's not forget, Musk bought Twitter sight unseen. So yep. That rests over this. But now Musk is out there trying to say, oh, but you're lying to the FTC about your spam bots, your spam accounts. And then what
SEC,
what
not, Mike explains, not FTC, SEC.
SEC, thank you. And then what Mike explains, details, is that an issue here is Twitter's MDAOs, monetizable daily active users. And the MDAO is not a view of the entirety of Twitter. It is, they're telling the FTC, this is what we're telling advertisers of the people who might actually be human and could click on an ad. Taking out spam, taking out legitimate good bots too, because they're not going to click. This is the monetizable daily active users. And yes, we've already cleared out the spam. We've already gone through all that.
That number is post-spam reduction.
It is post-spam reduction. And importantly, it's important to keep in mind that Mike points out, is that Twitter and their executives were very motivated to keep that number low, because the higher number that number was, if they put it too high, the advertisers would say, well, your efficacy of your advertising is crap because the proportion of people clicking is low.
There's two sides to that story. We deal with that all the time, too. You want to accurately report how many impressions an ad is going to get on your platform, but it's and you get paid by the impression, right? So,
yes.
So,
but they also look at how efficient.
Return on investment. So if your ads are too expensive, regardless, they're going to say, well, it costs too much to get too little result. So I guess it's true there is some incentive to not make that number too high, but there's also incentive to make it higher because you make more money. So you want to find the highest number you can get that will not be like so high that they say, well, this isn't working.
Honestly, the best thing
to do would be to say the actual number, but who knows?
The actual number, which is what Mike says they're actually trying to do and have a methodology.
He says Musk
explains that exactly.
Musk confuses the total number of spam bots on the platform with the numbers Twitter's giving after, you know, in its MDAO report, which is
right.
What
what Twitter has warranted is that we've done this. So what, I lose Mike's logic a little bit here, but what he emphasizes is that what Mudge says backs up Musk, actually backs up Twitter's case. And so he's just saying, and Mike being Mike, bless his heart, gets just outraged at the media coverage because they just gobble up the Musk line on this don't question it and don't analyze it.
Yeah, they're not that subtle.
They're not educated on stuff.
And Mike is, who would expect for sure. And we try to be educated. And certainly educate our audience on this. Remember, for the most part, companies don't report anything. MDAO is something Twitter made up. They report monthly active users, MAU. and MDAO, or monthly day or daily active users, DAO. Right. MDAO is monetizable users. In other words, a different number, lower number, that reflects the actual users that are seeing your ad that could buy your product. So, in fact, that's Mudge says this in his complaint. Until 2019, Twitter reported total monthly users, but stopped because the number was subject to negative swings for a variety of reasons, including removing bots.
Yeah.
Instead, Twitter announced a new proprietary opaque metric they called monetizable daily active users, defined as valid user accounts that might click through ads and actually buy a product. I understand why Twitter would do that. And as long as advertisers accept it, that's fine. There's no legal requirement to use monthly active users instead of daily monetizable.
But I think Musk is trying to say that Twitter is defrauding people there and without the evidence. And in fact, what's happening is Twitter is saying, no, this is our methodology. We're explaining this to you many, many times. And you're choosing to be confused. And now you're using Mudge to try to enhance that confusion, but I think when it gets into court, that's not going to stand.
So there's a few.
It's also irrelevant to the.
There's a few possibilities here. One is that Mudge is absolutely forthright, honest, and is doing the right thing and is telling the world what Twitter's really up to and that they're not secure and they're just pretending to be. There's also the opposite, which is that he's a disgruntled employee because he was fired 6 months ago and perhaps suborned by Elon Musk, who thought, here's somebody I can use as a witness in my trial, or perhaps just motivated by other reasons and isn't telling the truth. And the truth is, I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. But just because he says it's so doesn't mean it's so, is I guess what I'm
saying. Yeah, but I say here, he has a documented history at Twitter of being outspoken about security risks, and some of them are very real, like access to the servers or not having running unpatched versions of Linux on the servers, having employees have access to account credentialing stuff that they shouldn't after the hack. All of that is very real, and I can see if you are.
Is it real? Do we know it's real?
Okay, if that is the case, then that makes
we don't know it's real. It's probably verifiable. In other words, in an investigation, we could probably find that out.
But if you
would I be surprised if it were true that Twitter was kind of screwed up?
No.
Yeah. So hold up, though. If you are a security person, and there's a very real persona that goes into security, and you feel aggrieved, and then you're also going up against management who has no interest in listening or updating things that don't feel like, you know, remember, they're in crisis. In 6 months ago, they were still in some sort of how are we going to make money? What are we going to do? You know, so having some security guy come up, guys, we have to do this. I can see why he got fired, right? I can also see how he is still a person who desperately cares about the security of something that journalists, activists, et cetera, use every day to try to influence people.
So you think him being fired was justifiable because he raised awareness or attempted to raise awareness?
Well, not justifiable, but it's understandable.
I think he was probably, not diplomatic. And I say this because I talked to lots of security people who probably out of all the security researchers that I talk to, and I do talk to a lot, half of them have left a job because they were frustrated with the way management treated their recommendations. So not everybody goes and becomes a whistleblower, but a lot of management and a lot of companies takes what security companies, they should. I mean, security folks are focused on security. Management's focused on security, profits, roadmaps and everything else. But the security persona is like the superhero. And when the superhero is like, I will save the day. And they're like, no, thank you. Then they're like, oh, you are wrong and evil. I will leave. But a lot of these people do leave. It's not that uncommon to see. I mean, it's
they
a common
to be a little
visible.
Dogmatic, right, Stacey? I mean, they this is the right way, and when it's not, they're offended, and maybe they should be, but it's hard to compare all. I mean, it's true, in any field, right? Teachers will get mad when people don't respect our scholarship time. Journalists get mad when somebody doesn't understand how hard the job is. Yeah, it's we're all in our blinders.
Given where he's worked, I have no reason to believe that Zach Ho is anything but an honorable and talented person, but there are questions. Why did he wait so long to file this complaint? He was fired in January.
Maybe he was spooked by Elon. I mean, think about it this way. He wasn't secretive, according to all the reporting inside Twitter. Like, he wasn't secretive about the issues he had with management's response to his recommendations. So it could be that Musk was like, hey, let's call this guy. Let's see what happens. And maybe Mudge was like, oh, crap. I don't want to be like a behind-the-scenes influence kind of thing. So he just brought everything into the open.
Or again, another theory.
I don't know.
Another theory is Jack brings in this guy. The guy messes everything up. Parag, who is a technology guy, said he's not helping. He's full of crap. You're out of here now that I'm the boss. You know, you don't know the dynamics of the organization, and you have a technology boss in Agarwal, and I think that matters.
He's also calling Agarwal's baby ugly. I mean, if you built the technology infrastructure in this country.
Good point, Stacey. Good point.
I swear. I'm surprised this didn't turn into another episode of Die Hard, because I swear it sounds just like one of those movies. The one with
when Donnie, who has a great Irish accent, Donnie O'Sullivan, on CNN asked him, why did it take you so long? He said, this wasn't my first choice. This wasn't the path I wanted to take. I exhausted all internal options. That could explain the 6 months. Like, he's trying to get it fixed. He tried to do it right. And he finally got frustrated and said, look, I got to go public because Twitter's not going to fix this. My only caution, it's just my instinct is, all right, let's not necessarily accept this on its face.
Yeah, I think you're right now. Yeah,
I want to see what the results of investigation are. It is, you're right, Jeff, completely believable.
Either way,
it's not incredible.
Also not think this is going to have necessarily a legal impact on the case that everybody's talking about.
Musk could have a very big legal impact on Twitter, because remember, they have an FTC consent decree.
That's a separate
about this stuff. And by the way, that's where Zacko could make some money, because he would get a percentage of any judgment against Twitter as a reward for being a whistleblower. So if you're asking what's his incentive, well, it could be because he's a true believer, but there might be money in it as well.
That's all right. I think I've asked this before, but could Twitter come after Musk later for defamation?
Well, you can sue anybody for anything, my friends.
It's hard for a company. But the voting booth companies are doing that after Fox. So yes, they could.
I mean, this is just the first salvo in what could be a very long war.
Long time. Caught in the jaws here.
So Agarwal,
I like Twitter. Twitter. It's just a fun little place where we can talk and say silly things and see pictures.
Well, there's another question.
Like,
there's another question. Does any of this matter, and why does it matter?
I mean, it's a publicly traded company. Given that tweets can move markets. So there's a financial incentive to be like, hey, you know, we need to lock this down. It also, I mean, if we look at January 6th, you could say that tweets also can incite political faction, violence. How do we want to call that?
Argument is that Twitter is central to conversation in the public square, and so it needs to be secure, reliable, authentic. We count on it to be that.
I would argue that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's also remember back to the days of the fail whale. It's a lot better than it used to be.
I'm not convinced that. I can't deny it, Stacey, that Twitter does have that impact. You're absolutely right. To me, though, I still see it's kind of as a more frivolous place where people just throw crap out.
But there were like the Saudi spies who got the a job at Twitter and had access, back end access to accounts from activists, and then. I don't know if they murdered people or what happened.
They revealed things back and they just got found guilty. One thing that Mudge points out too is that the company kind of was forced by the Indian government, and the what would some say is the dusk of their democracy, to hire certain people. At Twitter, and India has been going after Twitter as well, trying to cut political dissension. They're stuck in a lot of vices.
Maybe I'm conditioned because I've been on Twitter since, you know, I remember the horse
e-books. You were the most popular person.
Horse e-books. Yeah, I remember when I was the, you know. So Twitter's always been kind of more of a playground for me than a... than the place where the national dialogue happens. In fact, I often think that giving too much importance to tweets, even from former presidents, is a mistake because they're just tweets.
But you sound like somebody who is ignoring the reality of, like, well, just because I think television was a silly place for Westerns and soap-sponsored daytime television, it doesn't have an influence on the discourse.
True.
But that's not true. I mean, Twitter today is not what it was when we joined in like 08 or 07.
Stacey playing Newton Minow. Who's Newton Minow?
Television is a vast wasteland.
What old guy is Newton Minow?
Former FCC chairman and the guy who said TV was a wasteland, a vast wasteland.
He was born in 1926.
So he's only 10 years older than me and Jeff.
You're saying my father had me when he was 10?
No, I'm kidding. Just kidding.
He was
just
chairman of the FCC in 1961. Oh,
yes, this was the dawn of television. This was the same, Stacey. This was when TV was in its infant age, just like the internet is now. So he came along and said, it's all screwed up the world. And everybody listened.
He is still alive.
Said TV was awful.
He's 96. He was JFK's chairman of the FCC.
He's still alive?
He's still alive. Barack Obama gave him the...
Why do you say it like that?
Well, he's 96.
His kid came after me because I dared criticize that speech on Twitter, and the kid went after me.
It was a little late to criticize that speech. That was... a long time ago.
I'm a busy guy, Leo. It takes me a while to get to things. You know,
he gave the speech in 1961.
I'm about to start tweeting 1968.
50
wait
years
to see what
later,
I have to say about Vietnam.
Jeff Jarvis noticed and tweeted about it. Anyway, he won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It was given to him by Barack Obama in 2016. So he is.
You actually might be interested in reading the speech, Stacey. It's a very famous speech.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with the quote, so I will go check out the speech.
Yeah.
Just like, oh man. All right.
Man.
You're like Newt Minow, Leo.
Yeah. You did a very good Newton Minow imitation. I might add, Stacey. You could make a roadshow out of this.
Excellent. Me and a
Hal Holbrook,
a good 96-year-old
Mark
man.
Twain and Stacey Higginbotham as Newt Minow.
I am serious though in the question of how much import we give Twitter.
It's a good question. Does it have to be important? Is it okay if people use it differently than it's intended?
No.
Does that?
It's only important. Because if the FTC and the SEC are getting involved in an investigation over whether there are spam bots on this platform, or an investigation over whether it's truly secure, it's kind of acting like, well, it's really important that it. I mean, people are using. Pseudonyms. There, you don't know whose people's real identities
are.
Okay, it's
part
fine,
of
but that's
set of the so. Place.
But you wouldn't say that on the nation's paper of record, the New York Times.
But
you,
that's you know, oh, that's the but point. It's not. It's, that's why it's dangerous it's, to call the internet a medium. Exactly that. But, exactly because the presumptions that come with that.
But that's my question.
Too limiting to freedom of speech.
That's I understand. No,
yes,
no. But
I
that's
agree.
My question. Is Twitter
green?
The I don't think it rises to the level of
what if it doesn't. It doesn't have to be as credible as the New York Times.
No, but then it doesn't have to be as perfect with its spam bots and its security.
Okay,
either.
So argument there is. Should Mudge have blown the whistle on this private company?
No, he should have. It's a public company, and he should have.
And I
think what we have to do is wait and see what the investigations prove from the SEC and the FTC.
Yeah, but you still have to report that somebody
has done this. Guess what?
We're doing that.
We just spent 32 minutes on it. Yeah, absolutely. But I do think that the response does matter depending on how important you think Twitter is to the national conversation and its role in the national conversation. So, it sounds like, Stacey, you think it is as important as a major journal of fact. It's not fact.
I think it's...
It's opinion.
I think it's important less because of the newspaper thing and more because people treat it like a secure infrastructure, kind of like you might...
Well,
like,
you shouldn't, I think. That's a mistake.
You shouldn't. But, you know, people are holding...
I'll give it as much credence as the Wall Street Journal opinion page. How about that?
You're being far...
It's kind of like that. It's just an opinion page for everybody.
Except the Wall Street Journal has bad timestamps.
it's important enough. Because it has timestamps, it's important enough. There's a record of it, and it's not necessarily...
But people don't treat it that way. That's part of the problem.
We have a record of you typing this out and hitting enter, and it went to these servers.
Exactly. But that's part of the problem, Ant, is that people act as if it's the water cooler, but its structure acts as if this is government documents stamped and, you know,
which we don't care about either.
Well, those are in the library. Tweets are in the Library of Congress.
But so is All in the Family, right? It's there as a cultural phenomenon.
Stacey, do you know what All in the Family is? I'm just checking out.
Racist TV show, right?
No.
Archie Bunker?
That's the racist character on a show that taught America how racist we are.
Yeah, Archie Bunker.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles share a deep love?
See, this is why Twitter is important.
Trending story, folks.
By the way, this is I got a dumb question for you. A really dumb question for you.
Yeah.
On my Twitter homepage, I don't see trending. Where do I get trending?
It's on the right.
Oh, man. I want your settings.
On the right-hand corner.
Do you have what's happening? You don't have that?
No. I don't have trending. No.
Well, they don't call it trending anymore. It's what's happening. They don't.
What's happening? Oh, okay.
They don't call it trending anymore.
They added in the...
You have what's happening on yours? Mr. Jarvis?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Used to be called trending.
Used to be trending. Well, it used to be simpler. It used to be just be the topics.
They added editorial oomph to this. Yeah, look, so underneath what's happening, real headlines. Some are slugged news.
Yes.
And some are slugged trending. But Olivia Wilde breaking her silence on Harry Styles is neither. So it's neither news nor trending.
And some are sponsored.
This is true.
And some are sponsored. That's my biggest complaint about Twitter now. It seems to be only on the mobile.
They gotta make money, Leo.
They gotta make their cash.
But wait.
By the way, is it time for your commercial?
Yeah, I'm about to do that. It's only... So I've decided I can't read Twitter on mobile anymore, or I'll have to use a third-party app, because the way they do it, promoted is the last thing in the tweet. So you start reading a tweet thinking it's a real tweet. And it's, by the way, like on mobile, it's like every fourth tweet. And then you get...
But you can tell. Once a month I get fooled. But most times I can tell right off the bat that it's fake.
It's really bad on mobile. I tend to just use list and notifications on mobile. I don't even bother just going to my feed.
Yeah.
Yep.
That bugs me because it's you don't know it's promoted. I get fooled a lot.
I feel like mine are so ridiculous that I'm like...
So let me just... Here's my mobile. So Mike Masnick, the first tweet, then Louisa, real tweet. President Biden, I think he's real. Wet Moser, Laurie Garrett, all real people. And then Underdog Fantasy, which, by the way, blue check. What would you do if you won $2 million from a fantasy football draft entered today?
Promoted.
It's just like Taboola and Outbrain on every news site in America.
Promoted, yeah. I guess I should have known that one was promoted. Let's go. Sherilyn Ifill, Glenn, Weather Channel. Oh, promoted.
Promoted.
New feature.
The Wall Street Journal wastes their money promoting to me, man.
They spend so much money sending me stuff.
But you don't see this on the... this is what puzzles me. You don't see it on the website.
Nope.
I see it on the website.
At least not as often.
UPS. I see. Okay, here we go. Wall Street Journal's promoting... UPS Business is promoting a Wall Street Journal story.
Oh, maybe because I'm blue? No, you're blue.
Data Stacks, Boing Boing, Kevin Beaumont, Real Person, Apple promoted tweet. So every four or five tweets on the website, I'm getting promoted stuff.
I don't have the same frequency. Leo's right. I got higher frequency.
I don't see any promoted ones on my...
See, I've got... That was five and then promoted. Then I've got six promoted. And this is a Doritos chip.
Are you on your... this is on your computer?
Yeah, this is it's about every five for me on the web.
Why it's more like 12 for me.
Oh, I'm looking at latest tweets. Are you not looking at latest?
Maybe
if it's... If I look, go back home. Maybe it's go back home. Fetterman, Aaron Rupar... Massimo, no, I don't have any promoted tweets.
No, I just switched to latest, Leo, and I get promoted.
Am I just lucky? Because it's terrible on mobile.
Yeah, this is way better. My mobile and web experiences.
I have not yet. None of these is promoted yet. These are all real and good.
They know you're worthless to the advertiser.
I am a bot. Must be.
You are not an MDAO. You are not monetizable.
I'm not counting. Seriously, I have yet to see a promoted tweet.
Oh my That's God. Impressive. I've seen like eight.
Wow.
Yeah, it's about every five or six for me.
Wait. What browser are you using? Does that have an impact?
Oh.
I'm in Brave.
Oh, that's what's happening.
I'm in Chrome.
I have Firefox with the uBlock Origin. It's blocking them. That's pretty sophisticated. I'm surprised uBlock Origin is smart enough to know.
Well, it says promoted.
Well, that's hard to do. I mean, usually they do it by... web IP address or something. Oh, that's good. Okay, that's what it is. Oh, good. Thank you.
So you're robbing Twitter. Yeah. Or Twitter can't make money because of you.
$3 a month. I give them my blue.
Are you still in $3?
Yeah, I'm still at $3. They raised
it. I haven't gone back since it went up.
You got it because you quit and then you came back.
I didn't quit. I just, my card's expired.
Or whatever. That's like a year. It's the same thing.
I'm still battling that. I keep getting notifications. So, oh, yeah, we need to update your card. I'm like, jeez, that's another one. Because I use so many burner cards.
All right. I'm sorry. This is really boring.
You know, one of my favorite new Twitter accounts is Random Restaurant. _restaurant_bot. And it really is random. Sometimes they're Pizza Huts. Sometimes they're fancy restaurants. They're from all around the world. Four pictures from a random restaurant.
Would you think that it would be good for Twitter to force everybody that's a bot to have bot in the at the end of the name, kind of?
No,
good bots. A lot of them are useful. That.
Yeah, but that's okay. Then I would still know it's a bot.
Yeah,
I've got the murder bot.
Maybe a different
bot,
word than bot.
But all I ever see is the actual name, random restaurant. You really have to look
Why do I want to follow bot. This? Why do I want to see random tweets from restaurants that I don't know?
I think sometimes you get a really good-looking restaurant.
He loves the quirkiness of the internet. Just don't worry.
Yes,
clearly, and he loves TikTok.
Unfollowing.
It's gonna irritate you, Leo.
Unfollowing.
And then you're gonna talk to Jeff about how it's irritating.
I do it.
I'm unfollowing right now.
And then we're gonna have to hear Jeff talk about the virtues of quirkiness. Although I do follow cats with jobs, so. I'm kind of with Jeff.
Wait a minute. What's that? Cats with jobs?
Yeah.
What?
Cats with jobs.
Is that related to bodega cats?
No, it's... Oh, at
cat workers. Okay. Lisa, got a new Twitter account for you to follow.
Wow. I feel so boring.
You need it.
I don't follow anything like this.
That's good.
Oh, keep going. The next one's good. Keep going. There. That's good.
The one cat.
The cats with jobs is adorable.
Cat and the money. Let's make it rain, kitty cat. Oh, my God. Okay, you're right. I'm following this one. See, this is much better than random restaurant tweets.
Hey.
Yes.
Hey.
Yes, it is.
Oh, there's a podcast one. Did you get to the one with the cat with the mic?
Cat with
the
mic?
It's your new... Yeah, keep going down.
No, we don't.
No, keep going down. Chloe and Ian, you'll see it.
You tried, Ant. I just want to thank you for...
Too far.
I went too far. I went to the end of the internet. I've come to the end of the internet.
The podcasting cat. There's a podcasting cat there. You're going to like it.
Podcasting cat.
Keep going. There you go.
Cat. Hello, podcast cat.
Podcat.
He's wearing a bow tie.
It's a podcat.
I used to wear bow ties.
I bet you look pretty dorky in them.
Actually, clearly Annie Leibovitz did not take this picture. We are going to.
Let's talk about this because I don't even know about this story and y'all are getting me all excited.
Let me take a break and then we'll come back and tell you why Annie Leibovitz, who is widely considered to be the greatest portrait photographer of all time, sucks. But first.
Wow.
Am I right? Am I right? Aunt Pruitt's going to explain. But
Aunt
first.
Aunt Pruitt's going to use bad words.
He used bad words before the show. He's so incensed by this. This Week in Google is brought to you by our great friends at Melissa. I love these guys. And they do something every business needs. Because every business has an address book. Suppliers, contractors, customers. Customers are probably the most important, right? And you wouldn't believe how often that data goes bad. And poor quality data costs you money. On average, $15 million a year. If you're a small to medium-sized business, every penny counts. The longer poor quality data stays in your system, the more losses you can accumulate. How do you lose money? Well, sending bills to the wrong people, catalogs to the wrong people, calling somebody by the wrong name or saying, oh, hi, Stacy, you live in Florida, right? No, that's bad. In fact, it can really be bad for customer service if you address somebody with the wrong name or the wrong address. And the customer's calling, they're already frustrated, and you say, oh, we're going to get right on this. That's just terrible. You need Melissa. Melissa is the address expert, the leading provider of global data quality and address management solutions. They have tools that will clean your address book in a variety of ways. You can process an entire address list for accuracy. You can add fields that aren't there, so you could supplement it. You can parse and standardize first and last names. Wouldn't want to call somebody Higginbotham Stacy. No. Profiling, you can address and analyze your data to improve its quality over time. Get rid of bad email addresses. Melissa helps remove up to 95% of bad email addresses. They know that's a bad address. Get rid of it. And it's so easy to use. There are all sorts of ways you can use Melissa on-prem. There's a SaaS app. There's an API. There's a cloud-based data cleansing and enrichment tool. You upload a file to the on the first tab, but you do this on the website. Paste your data into the second tab, select data quality service. There's a variety of them. Click next, map the input fields, select the output fields, process your list, bada bing, bada boom. You're done. There's a lookups app on iOS and Android for onesie, twosie address names, email address searches. Melissa's flexible deployment options on in so many ways allow you to get it the way you want it, depending on your preferences, your business size, your budget. And please understand, Melissa treats the data as solid gold, just like you do. They continually undergo independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security and privacy. And, of course, they're compliant, SOC 2, HIPAA, GDPR compliant. So you never have to worry about using Melissa. Melissa's data quality suite and clean suite speaks for itself. Once again, though, named a leader by G2 in 2022. Melissa is experienced, independent, 37 years of data quality expertise. More than 10,000 businesses know Melissa as the address experts. And by the way, if you sign up for a service level agreement, 24/7 world-renowned support from their global support center. So make sure your customer contact data is up to date. It'll save you money, not cost you money, save you money. Get started today. 1,000 records clean for free. Go to melissa.com/twit. Try the API, too. You could easily add Melissa to your customer service software or your shopping cart. Eliminate data entry mistakes at the point of entry. melissa.com/twit. Thank you, Melissa, for your support. I love Annie Leibovitz. I think her pictures are amazing. And I never even imagined there was a problem until I read an article about the latest Annie Leibovitz photo essay in Vogue. She did pictures of the new Supreme Court justice and Ketanji Brown, and apparently didn't do a good job. Anth, what's the story?
Sorry, I was on mute.
It's okay. You can swear publicly. It's fine.
Well, she was nabbed for the job to capture beautiful images of our latest Supreme Court justice, who just made dadgum history, because she's a great portrait photographer. However, apparently she's not that good at shooting portraits of people of color, black folks in general. And we've talked about this on the show in the past about Google's technology, especially with the pixels.
These are awful.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Describe them for our listeners.
So there's two problems here, and one is pointed out in this article in the Guardian, which I thought was really good. Let me give her credit, by Teo Barrow, which is the content. She chose to take pictures of Justice Brown Jackson at the Lincoln Memorial, and I understand when she says, you see what the problem is here? It's the white savior complex all over again. You know, she's at the foot of Abe Lincoln. But there's also...
Abe is lit brilliantly, and she is seen only in shadow.
In the shadows.
Right.
Now, Leibowitz's style is very high contrast. A lot of them are black and white.
Fine. That's great. It's moody. I get that. But go back to that first image there.
It's pretty dark.
We're looking at this frame. We have the Lincoln Memorial back there in the background, which has its own set of lighting already hitting it. So it's going to show up. I know Miss Annie has her own light kit. She could have put one little daggum light even at the foot of our new Supreme Court justice there just to light her up, because she's in a dark overcoat, a dark shirt. She's in the daggum shadows. Show her as the subject here.
Well, and the expression is not exactly regal. I mean,
something.
If you look at this picture, you don't get an image of a proud Supreme Court justice representing the first black woman on the Supreme Court, somebody with power and dignity. Nope. You get a completely different
impression. Looking
up to
the white dude.
Yeah. So I agree. Yeah. Now, is it possible this is unprocessed? Like, this isn't what's going to show up in the magazine? This is a leaked...
It was leaked by her. It was Annie Leibovitz.
It's from Annie.
Vogue magazine.
This is from Annie Leibovitz's Twitter account. Oh, never mind.
Right. Okay, so
and then not just mention, the framing of that portrait. I mean,
she's proud of this work.
And you mentioned the processing on that. She has a team of post processors. Somebody looked at this beyond her. You know, there was several eyes that looked at this, and then it went to the approval staff at Vanity or whoever did
Vogue.
I mean, Vogue. At Vogue, and they approved it too. So I'm like, who the hell? Who thought this was okay to put this historic person in the shadows of this photograph and say, hey, this is just beautiful. This is what we want to promote. This is how we want to promote this historic event in our country, by putting this black woman in the shadows at the foot of a white statue. I didn't like that one bit, especially when I know her work is beautiful. She shoots a lot of other athletes and a lot of other actors, actresses, celebrities, or what have you, and their images come out just outstanding. I love her work. I freaking pay for the masterclass subscription specifically to watch her photography class.
Here's another image of hers from Vogue of another black actress, which is fine, I think. Do you not? So it feels like she didn't do justice to
that. Yeah, that one's better than some of the other things. But
there's also if you go down, there's also photos of the cover she shot of Simone Biles and Viola Davis.
Another mistake. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
You know,
do you think she's racist?
Really got me. I'm not going to say she's racist. I'm saying that she can do better.
Val Demings.
She's a brilliant photographer. She can do better than what she did.
I mean, Google was spending a lot more effort to show people of color. Well,
right. She was part of their campaign.
Here's a picture of John Favreau and Yoda.
I forgot it.
Yoda's much better lit than the white guy. Maybe
that saves her.
Maybe she's got a thing for green guys.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
So you're not accusing her of racism as
I'm not going to accuse her of racism. I'm saying I know
Rihanna
she's a much better photographer.
It's a beautiful cover.
That's great.
Yeah. So,
but Viola Davis and Simone Biles, those are really, really bad images.
Tanji Brown Jackson. Yeah.
Could be so much
better.
We're
hearing from a photographer who knows how it should be done. That's the important
thing. You know, if you go to that tweet of hers where she's, you know, showing off the pictures of the Supreme Court justice, the portrait shot where it's up close, even that one, it's as easy as just doing a simple filter on her just to bring the light up on her.
It's pretty
because
dark.
You can tell she does have a light in this image because there's a soft shadow going right down the bridge of her nose. So does have a light over there.
She chose
but
to,
she's still
to make
just sort
moody.
Of in the shadows.
She's going moody. Now, so we know that a lot of film the chemistry is designed to look good for white people and does not look good for black people. This is a historical problem. This is what Google was talking about in their recent campaign for the Pixel 6 images, getting skin tone right.
Yep.
Maybe Annie's just using the wrong film.
I don't get it. My problem is she's not the only person that saw that image.
Yeah.
You know, it went through a bunch of levels of approvals.
If you do a search, there's so many articles. Annie Leibovitz photos blasted. Yet again, she can't photograph black women. That's from Digital Camera World. Boing, boing. Yahoo. And you said Petapixel had a...
Petapixel is where I first saw it.
Vox had a big piece.
Yeah.
Vox's headline, representation is deeper than putting black icons on magazine covers.
You know who I fault more is Vogue and the editorial team at Vogue.
Yes, they had the last word to say, okay, print it and publish.
Well, in this case, I don't know. In terms of what she's sending out, she is such... I mean, yes, in every case of every photographer, it's the photo editors who do the final selects. I've been there. But in the case of Annie Leibovitz, she might have more power than that.
She might have some pull. She may have some clout, but damn it.
But you're right.
This picture doesn't look good, Miss Annie. Yeah. I mean, you have her at the foot of this dude in the dark.
Here's Google's opportunity.
Backlit.
Send her backlit. A Pixel 6 and say, just start using a Pixel, Annie.
Yeah, I put a link in the chat where she was part of the Pixel campaign, and I remember us bringing this up, like, wow, she's promoting the camera, and I said specifically, look, this camera is going to be quite nice, but understand that she's a professional and she's going to understand how to use the tool. She even has a dadgum case on the phone where she's not really holding the phone.
Oh, so I remember
right. She knows what she's doing. But
well, the fact that
those
tweeted,
two images there,
tweeted
man,
that pretty bad image is a little
unaware of that's the issue. I think in the end is you can
and
learn.
People can say style, and the style, I get the high contrast moody style, that's I'm totally fine with that, but at the same time, if someone's going to take a portrait of me for the cover of some monumental event, I'd like for my face to be visible and not necessarily have my face in the shadows.
She can do it. I mean,
earned
I'm looking
that
at her
shit.
Instagram, here's a picture of Olivier Rousteing, looks great.
That looks good.
Beautiful. So she knows how to do it, and she takes pictures of a lot of black folk. It's not...
That's outside in natural light. It's really hard to screw that one up.
You know, I think she did Darth Vader a real disservice in this shot here. It really is awfully, awfully dark. Look how bright his laser is compared... No, I'm just being silly here. I don't think she's overrated. I like her a lot. Obviously, you do too. You took
like
her master class.
I do.
That's why he's all the more disappointed.
Master class.
Here's Amanda Gorman. Here's on the covers for Amanda Gorman, which I think is beautiful.
Okay, Vogue. So who approved that one? Because that one looks great.
Yeah,
she's lit.
She's lit. Yeah. I think more an odd choice to do it at the Lincoln Memorial and to do it at the foot of Abe. With that expression of uncertainty, it was an interesting choice. You know,
just not to light her.
It's a beautiful picture. It's not a great portrait. I think it's a good picture. It's not a great portrait.
I've not heard.
I don't even think it's a good picture.
No, I agree with Stacey.
I mean, I don't. When I look at this picture, I don't know who I'm looking at. There's nothing guiding my eye is directed at Lincoln. And he's not in the right spot. So it's confusing because he's not in the right... Between her gaze and Lincoln is where the focal point of the photo should be. Yeah. And nothing's there. And
okay,
the focal
right.
So they're fighting.
So it's not a great picture.
I love how she just broke that down.
Yeah, really well done. Stacey, would you like to be on Hands-On Photography this week?
No, thank you.
This is going to be the topic discussion.
I am the what not to do on Hands-On Photography.
Actually, you already got a job because tomorrow morning you and Aunt and I are going to be doing Clara and the Sun.
That is true.
Yep.
I'm embarrassed to say I have 3 or 4 hours still to go in the book.
What?
Oh, you're burned through.
Oh, and they're the best such a good 3 or 4 hours.
It's such a good book. Okay,
so speed.
You're going to feel feelings,
it's
Leo.
It's very interesting because it's about, first of all, the author, Nobel Prize winner Ishiguro, wrote Remains of the Day, which is an amazing book. This is a science fiction novel, which he doesn't, I think, normally write, about artificial intelligence. These are artificial friends, little robot playmates for children, and Clara is one. And it's told from her point of view, which makes it very interesting. But it's also just a good story, I think. I'm really enjoying it. I really like it. So tomorrow, 9 a.m. for you Club Twit members, we're going to get up early. Stacy and Ant and I.
That's not early.
So early.
Both Ant and I will have been up for a couple hours.
So early.
Leo's day off.
I'll try to brush my hair this time.
Still not early, even if it's your day off. Good grief. It's 9 a.m.
Do you remember how I looked last time?
The chickens had been up for 4 hours, man. What are you waiting on?
Anyway, if you're like me, you can also listen to it on demand on the Twit Plus feed. If you're not a Club Twit member, this is a good reason to join because we don't make this one public. Like Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows, The Ultimate Linux Show. It's one of the shows we do because the club supports
Untitled.
Untitled Linux Show. What did I call it?
You call it the ultimate. It's the Untitled.
It is the ultimate Linux Untitled show. Linux Show. If you're not a member, $7 a month, ad-free versions of all the shows, these extra shows, plus I think the best darn Discord ever.
Clearly.
Twit.tv/ClubTwit. And Ant's the community manager, so he's a little biased, but I am too. It's really good. Twit.tv/ClubTwit. You know what Discord I am now in? Midjourney. Do you know about this?
I was on that for a little while, and then I popped out. I got sick of all of the notifications. Yeah.
So this, there's a good article about, you know, we all know about DALL-E 2. Mm-hmm. There's a good article comparing these AI generated images from, and this is Petapixel, from DALL-E 2, Stable Diffusion, and the one we were just talking about, which is actually in a Discord server, Midjourney. All three work the same way. You give them a text description of an image. They generate an image. And Matt Grokut, who wrote this for Petapixel, did a great job. Actually, he's writing up Fabian Stelzer's research, where Stelzer put together images. It's actually we should go to the Stelzer's Twitter thread, where he put together images with the same prompt from all three.
So smart.
It's pretty awesome. Yep. Pretty awesome reason.
This is really interesting. Film still, portrait of an old man, wrinkles, dignified look, gray silver hair, peculiar nose. I'm surprised they didn't get me. Wise, eternal wisdom and beauty. Oh, I see why. Incredible lighting and camera work, depth of field, bokeh, screenshot from Hollywood movie.
See how DALL-E could do with our Supreme Court justice.
Isn't this the differences here? Who do you think is who did the better job? Or it's not even a question of better.
It's all about taste.
That's the point.
I think DALL-E's is the most... Like, it could be real. Well, so could Stable Diffusion.
Nah, I think
Midjourney looks like a cartoon.
Midjourney looks like
That's
a hobbit.
Creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's Beatles Lego set catalog photograph.
So I tried to get DALL-E. I finally got in to the beta.
Yeah.
And for my book, I thought maybe I can get a book cover out of this. Gutenberg parenthesis, you think you can figure it out? It just completely befuddled it. Impressed.
Wow. How about this one? A human anatomical heart made of flowers, pastel, matte masterpiece. Now, this one, I love Midjourney's. Oh, I love
that. That's the creepy line. Oh,
you think that's creepy? Oh, I love it. Which do you like, Stacey?
Does
she have to like one of them?
You don't like any of them?
Stable Diffusion is the silliest. I like DALL-E 2 because it's Midjourney is prettier and it's more high contrast.
It looks like real art to me. That looks like you would see that.
Well, what is art, Leo?
I don't know.
What is art?
What is art? Behind the scenes shooting of the moon landing, Hollywood Studio, 1969. That's pretty funny.
That's fun. That's
what's funny. Really interesting.
Stable Diffusion looks closer to like all the existing moon photos.
Right.
Mid-Journey looks like a video cinematic game. Stuff.
So I have this. Should we just do one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's just do. I'll go into the newbies room. Mid-Journey use free to try for a certain number of images, and then you can pay for it. So here's somebody, Spider-Man with wings and a suit of armor standing above a city skyline. Think of some phrase that I could type in here. It takes about a minute, so we'll have to do something else while
Can you give me the
podcast legend? On?
The Twitter account I was just on is Fabians.eth. Oh, I'm sorry, Fabians. At Fabian Stelzer, S-T-E-L-Z-E-R. And he's the one who did all of these.
Podcast legend having lunch.
That's good. I like it. Podcast legend having lunch. Do you think it does better if you have a name or no?
No, it doesn't.
All right.
No, I didn't have any names in the other ones.
Do it in DALL-E, if you would, Jeff, and then we can...
I got to get into it.
Now I'm waiting, so it's going to be a while because I think it has to chew on it for a little bit.
All right. What I notice is that the Mid-Journey tends to have a bit of a cinematic feel to it. You get a lot of the blue and teal look, and then it has a bit of
More moody.
Most of them seem to have like this soft Gaussian blur on them too. It just sort of looks like paintings.
Here's a photorealistic potato river. for you, Kevin King, a megalodon breaking the surface of a huge wave chasing an orca.
Okay, what do you want me to say again?
What did we say? Podcast?
Podcast legend having lunch.
Having lunch. That seems like it might not be a long enough.
Yeah, I may need more.
Prompt.
You want me to say? In the style of, what's his name? Hooper. No.
Edward Hopper?
Edward Hopper, thank you.
I'll never forget. I won't say this.
I was talking to Lisa Carney here recently. She's been on my show a time or two. She's a photo finisher, where basically she takes a lot of the images that you see on ABC, Netflix, all the popular TV shows and movies, and she puts their art together. Really, really, really talented. And she talked about this Mid-Journey and she feared for some of the creators like you did, Mr. Laporte, saying that, you know what, people are going to lose jobs because now a marketing department can just put in these prompts and get what they want out of it. And then conversely, she said, you know what, but I'm going to be fine because I'm a finisher. And I'm like, yeah, you're definitely going to be fine because you can go in and totally, you know, redefine the stuff that came out of the prompts. Yeah. You know,
I just put it in the Discord.
Okay.
You did?
Okay.
This will get see. Oh, I'm not in that server anymore. I left the server.
Yeah. If I do this, I will. Huh. That's pretty good. And it was that a style or just in general?
I did a style.
His lunch is hot dogs and potatoes. And how come we're all bald? Did you say bald?
No.
Well, we said legend, so legend. I guess that implies bald or old.
That's what I got when I said Gutenberg parenthesis.
Okay. Not good.
No.
So it looks like, I don't know what it looks like. Oh, here it is.
It popped up.
Yeah. Podcast legend having lunch. it's still working on it. It's updating.
Wow.
Okay, there's your thumbnail.
That's awesome.
I think that's art. I think that's awesome. Podcast.
And you have hair.
Legend having lunch.
There I have hair, headphones have hair. On.
I'm definitely a podcast legend. Having lunch.
Man.
Isn't that funny?
That's hilarious.
That was good. Where'd it go? I lost it. Come on, podcast. So people, it looks like you can also refine it. Like you go that, and then do more with that, kind of.
Yeah.
Where'd it go? Shoot. Shooty, shoot, shoot. Stan Lee in heaven.
That'd be too easy.
There's a lot of traffic. Oh, here it is. Okay. So now what happens? What do these do? U1, U2, U3, U4. So I'm thinking maybe that's U2. Redo. U4. I don't know what these do. Maybe if I read the instructions. Okay. The bot will send you four images. Click the number buttons underneath to get upscales or variations. Ah.
Oh, okay.
So. Oh, and then it probably doesn't do them in place. There's Stan Lee in heaven. Oh, your job will start. Oh, so I gave it a bunch of jobs at once. Oh, crap. Oh, whoops. Clicking all those things. Oh, I'm sorry.
They are angry with you right now. Yeah,
I might have used up my free trial. Okay, here's another podcast legend having lunch. That's all about the lunch.
Yeah.
Job finished. See the results. It just improved the lunch. I asked it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I told it to improve specifically one of those images, which is
you. Did that just say Chadwick Boseman is a white dude?
Yeah, no, just Chadwick Boseman, which is weird, right?
Very weird.
Doesn't look like nothing him at all.
Like him.
Yeah. See, I think you're better off not podcast. Oh, here it is. Oh, there we even go. Better. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it.
That's awesome.
Look at this one. It looks like me and Joe Rogan having
Man,
lunch.
I love that.
That's hysterical. Podcast legend having a lunch. I'm going to frame this.
That's a good one.
That's freaking awesome.
That's a good one.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, print that out. That's
no
yeah.
kidding. Save that to my camera roll.
Print that out. That's a good one.
Wow.
I have to go in and play with it at some time. I haven't had any time.
I want to play with it some more, yeah. Here's, oh, that's good too.
Oh, it's still bringing them.
Well, I clicked it 20 times.
Oh, right.
Podcast legend having lunch.
I don't like
wow.
those as much.
Wowie. Oh, we really did a lot of lunches.
See, no headphones on those.
More Chadwicks. Here's a long spear killer hunter whale. Japanese demons in the forest.
That's cool.
Here's another podcast legend having lunch. I think this is what I'm going to look
sunset.
Like in about. Yeah.
Dude,
these are great.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the play.
I'm impressed with this. It's free, although I'm going to pay for it because I want to do more. I'm going to use these podcast legends having lunch. Look at this one.
You have new avatars now for your socials.
Yeah. That is just awesome.
Very nice.
Oh, okay. Yes, right. So go back and say, that's what the upscale is. And which one should I upscale? Two? One, two?
Two is nice.
And I kind of like three.
The one before that one.
With just food? Oh, the other one. Before.
The one that looked like you speaking with somebody.
Oh, I loved that Joe
that
Rogan one.
That one was really good.
Yeah, this
yeah.
one.
That one's really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, let's do, that's three, U3 upscale. Your job will say shortly. So you can do 8K.
Nice.
It really came out well, too, let me tell you. Oh, it's still working. That was the woman with lips. be careful there. A lot of Jesus's.
Red skull. That's pretty cool.
Matrix code in it. Realistic.
That's pretty cool.
This is one of the three. Oh, that's a podcast legend having lunch. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, that's hot.
That's my future.
That's hot.
That's me in a few years.
Wow.
Podcast legend having lunch. Having lunch. Oh, now we can do make variations, upscale to max, light upscale redo, beta upscale redo.
Oh,
so it's kind
totally
of settled on.
Good.
Oh, and this is the one you liked.
Yeah.
It's still, working on. Yeah.
That's hot, though. 77%. What the heck?
That's an AI for you. That's an AI in a nutshell, right? The lunch is his necktie. This is just a beautiful work of art.
It's almost done.
Oh, my God.
Dude. These are good.
Look at that.
These are good.
I feel like that's my future. That's me.
You know what's fascinating? You see the little logos? See the color? Right there on the headphones?
Yeah.
On the cans?
Yeah. So save this one as a thumbnail for the show.
All right.
I think that'll be a good thumbnail for the show.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, that's good too. I love these. All right, let's go back to the Discord, see what else it's done here. Oh my gosh.
Dogs.
Oh, more podcast legends. Look at this. It says legend. That's a great one.
It says, I just caught that. It said legend.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh my God. This is the finished one. This is the finished one. Upscale to max. Wow.
That's badass.
Yeah. So this is called Mid Journey, and it's really, you can actually sign up instantly, and it's just a Discord channel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. This is still working, 55%.
You see, that almost looked like Doc Searles, too.
It does. I should send it to Doc. Podfather Hector Salamanca. It's Lala. Wow. I should send this.
And it's not taking very long, either, considering.
No, these are working really fast. Considering there's also lots of other people using it. It's remarkable. 94%, almost done. Wow. Wow. I think these are beautiful, don't you? I mean, I feel like they're good. They're art.
They are very nice.
Wow, look at these. There's something going on in its little brain. Oh, here you go.
Gosh,
this is the max. Mm. This one's the max. I love these. Wow. Wowie, wowie. I've got a poppy on for some reason. Ooh, it's getting sexy there. And this is the other fully upscaled one.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think this is a painting. Yeah.
That's a freaking print right there, dude.
Oh. Unbelievable.
So well done.
Wow. All right. So I feel bad for people who are only listening because here's Casey Newton's piece.
Oh, it's a great piece.
His first week. Yeah, it's quite good.
What do you think, Stacey? You cover AI. We're going to talk about Clara and the Sun. What's the meaning of all this? Is it just a toy, or is there going to be some longer-term impact?
Well, so I don't know if AI has its own meaning. We're going to give it meaning, and we use it as a tool. But if you look at the way Silicon Valley is pushing AI, they're pushing AI to do things that people used to do better. Right, or people used to, what is this, cinnamon rolls with boobs?
It's me. Oh, yeah, it's no, no, googly eyes. Jeez, your mind, Stacey.
But wait a minute.
I'm just like, why am I looking at?
The only prompt is miniature cinnamon rolls, and for some reason, Dolly likes to add googly eyes to things.
Googly eyes.
I mean, I like to add googly eyes to things. Anyway, I think, it's a tool. And right now, all the use cases we're seeing getting funding and getting a lot of attention has been around taking people out of the equation. So you look at Amazon Go. I just read about a hotel in New Orleans that was fully automated. And part of me is like, I don't think this is smart, because once you automate things, we've already seen how terribly things can go wrong. Actually, there's a story this week that we're going to talk about Google not having people in the mix and the ability to call and communicate with people that causes problems. Yeah. I think we're going to see that whole thing when you start giving AI the ability, replacing humans with AI and giving them the ability to like check you into a hotel or check you out or fire people or hire people. What you're seeing is people, A, will adapt to game the system, and B, people who get caught in the system or the system doesn't serve them, they're not going to have a recourse, and that's going to be a problem. So I think that's where we're heading, but I think it's a dumb way to go, and we're going to hit a wall at some point very soon.
But wouldn't some managers argue that having this AI in place can create other higher level jobs, if you will?
That's true, but I don't think that's what they argue. I don't think that's actually what happens, because it doesn't create higher level jobs. It creates really bad, boring jobs for people. So like,
stop yourself.
You'll have people who are doing high level thinking, and those were not the people like who were doing those other jobs necessarily. But then you'll have people like you or me becoming photo editors for like DALL-E instead of working with people. So all the fun parts of our job, like working with other creatives, get sucked away, and we're just entering stuff into a computer and generating images, right? And then we're the human in that equation.
Yeah. We're also seeing creativity that we haven't seen. Kevin Roos, I just put it in line 85, Leo, did a good piece, I think a very reasoned piece. We need to talk about how good AI is getting. And, with my antennae up, my Martian antennae up, I was thinking, uh-oh, but moral panic.
That's kind of the question I was asking, too, because it's getting good. It's getting good. GPT-3 is good enough to write, sports stories.
He wrote a book review with it.
Yeah, he wrote a book review.
GPT-3. But he also says at the end, and this is what makes me happy, Roos said at the end, where'd it go? Sorry. News media need to do a better job of explaining AI progress to non-experts. Too often journalists, and he admits himself here, rely on outdated sci-fi shorthand to translate what's happening in AI to a general audience. We sometimes compare large language models to Skynet and HAL 9000 and flatten promising machine learning breakthroughs to panicky "the robots are coming" headlines. So I'm really glad he had that perspective here. And is exactly what you're saying, is that the opportunities are great. Yes, there's issues that Stacey will remind us we need to talk about. But wow, it's getting pretty good, pretty fast. It's cool.
There is, though, a critical point, the singularity, if you will.
I'm like, okay.
Right now you look at this stuff, and in almost every case you can say, yeah, that's an AI. Certainly occasionally something will come up in there that's really good, like that heart. That could have been a human that did it. But we know the difference right now. There's going to be a point. There's two singularities. There's the one that Ray Kurzweil talks about, where
it's indistinguishable from human. You just look at a picture or read an article, and it's hard. You can't tell the difference. A human could have written it or a machine could have written it. That's one singularity. Then there's the real singularity, which is when the machines become can design themselves, because that's when the acceleration happens, because they can do it, iterate at a much faster pace than humans. I feel like it's Zeno's paradox. We're getting closer and closer without actually getting there. You know, we're dividing the distance. I feel like we're not going to quite get there.
Good, right. And who says that's the goal? Who says it's the goal to beat the human brain? Who says it's the goal?
Well,
to
no, but that's the thing
do.
People right. fear.
New stuff.
That's the thing that people fear is the singularity.
Only because people like you make them fear it.
I'm not making anybody fear it.
Jeff welcomes our AI overlords. I think what we neglect to think about as people when we start thinking about this is we think of AI as this I'm trying to think. They don't recognize that there are still people behind the scenes pulling the strings and dictating how it's A, developed and deployed. And we don't question those people's motives. Instead, we look at the AI and declare them Skynet. When in fact, there's a large portion of people who would make a lot of money and gain a lot of power. It would be like a new scary feudalism if we had Skynet. You know, look at what China's doing to the Uyghurs. That is very much so. We attribute a lot of that to AI when it's really the people building the AI. And I think it's a distinction that we really should make, because if you don't look at the puppet masters and you're only looking at the puppets, you're really not seeing what's going on. And I know that sounds like super cheesy anarchist or whatever, but
there's a long history of scientists and technologists designing things that they lose control of. The atom bomb is a good example.
They knew that was going to be a bad idea.
Yeah,
I mean, when they were developing it, I mean, the base technology to win to it.
But they did it because they wanted
to
fight Nazism, and they thought that was the only way we could do that successfully.
Oh my God. There's this great book. I'm going to tell you what it is as soon as I get there. hold on. No, everyone should read it, because it talks about chemical warfare. It's all about chemistry and scientific research and how these scientists... Oh my God, where's the name of the book?
I think it's not unusual that scientists are just treat it as pure research and do it because they can. And then it happens that it has an impact.
It's called When We Cease to Understand the World by Benjamin Labatut, Labatut. It's not a great read in terms of riveting, but it is a really good portrait of a bunch of different scientists, and it's fictionalized too, but it's all based on their actual lives and facts, and then the kind of conversations behind the scenes and their doubts are what fictionalized. But it talks about the guy who invented chlorine gas for World War One chemical bombing.
Fritz Haber.
Talks about
Alexander Grothendieck and Werner Heisenberg and Erwin Schrödinger. Yeah, interesting.
May I see your book and add a book? Our dear friend David Weinberger's Everyday Chaos is very much about this. And it's a wonderful book in which he argues that we're hitting a point, and this might be a good point, Leo, where the computers can explain things or predict, I'm sorry, they can predict things better than we can, but can't explain it. There is no explanation. It's just through no end of A-B testing, it arrives at what is in fact a good prediction, and it could be a prediction of what we would say next, as in Lambda. And there's no explanation of how it got there. There will be an explanation.
We can't even look inside it to see the rules.
No.
We can't reverse engineer it. It just does it.
It just does it, and it does a good job of it.
But the myth is that we could ever explain anything. Right.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, we don't know how the brain works. So, you know.
Right. Exactly, Stacey. God knows what comes out of Leo's head.
The concern is quite reasonably, though. Here you are doing it as kind of blue sky research, and we're getting closer and closer to machines that can produce an output that's indistinguishable from human output. I think you're giving more credit to the people who are doing this, saying like they have the choice not to. That nobody has a choice not to. We're just going to do it, just as we do everything else, because you know we pursue these things. And then the fear is, well, what's the consequence of that?
Well, it's also, I think, Leo, I think what was wrong in the early days of the internet, what was wrong about Facebook, was that they, and maybe they couldn't have guessed it, but they never, I think, built in the system to say, how could this be misused? Let us build a guardrail against it.
That's what Amy Webb says. You have to think, you have to strategize. You have to think about the consequence of your actions. We're not real good at that. Although Oppenheimer, Robert Oppenheimer, as soon as he saw Trinity, said, you know, now, what is it? Now we have, are as gods.
Become gods.
We become gods.
Yeah. But Gutenberg invented movable type, or after the Chinese and Koreans did, and couldn't have predicted 150 years later would come
now
the newspaper.
Now I have become the death, the destroyer of worlds. It's from the Bhagavad Gita. Sorry. That deserves to be remembered. Because he immediately looked at Trinity and said, yeah.
I think all the scientists at the time probably said that.
Yeah, all the scientists at the time. I remember I just read the wonderful book about John von Neumann, and everybody understood that they were creating something that could end up destroying the world, but they were so anxious to stop the Nazis and end the war that they really thought, as did Oppenheimer, the Nazis were going to beat us to it if we didn't get onto it, and so we almost had to do it because it was us or them. You know, it was a self-defense. All right, I want to take a little break, come back. We will talk about customer support via Python script.
What?
Oh.
When we return.
It has you written all over it.
Our show today brought to you by In Real Life, IRL. It's an original podcast from Mozilla. A show for, guess what? People who build AI. And the people who develop tech policies to regulate it. Bridget Todd hosts this, and there's a new season just came out. That's why I want to mention it to you. It's looks at AI in real life. Boy, this couldn't be more timely, could it? Who can AI help? Who can it harm? This is season 6 of IRL. The show features fascinating conversations with people who are working to build more trustworthy AI. So I'll give you some example episodes, really good ones that I enjoyed. Like there's an episode about how the world is mapped with AI and what data is missing as much is as important, right, as what data is there. You'll hear about the people who are working to fill in those gaps and to take control of the data. There's an episode about gig workers who depend on apps for their livelihood. You know, those algorithms in Uber and Lyft and how they're pushing back against the algorithms that not only control how much they get paid, but who they pick up, where they go, what they do, whether they work or not. And about the workers who are looking to find new ways to gain power over the data so they can have better working conditions. The truth is out there, AI from above. When an algorithm is your boss, there are episodes for political junkies about the role that AI plays when it comes to the spread of misinformation and hate speech around elections. This is a very good show about a very important topic. We've been kind of, you know, meandering all around it. This show is all about it. IRL. Who has the power over AI? I invite you to search for IRL in your podcast player. We'll put a link in the show notes at twit.tv/twig. And many thanks to IRL and the folks at Mozilla who put this together. And tip of the hat, by the way, to Bridget Todd, who does such a good job with this. IRL. You can also go to irlpodcast.org/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. So this is actually the story you were talking about, with lack of support from Google. A dad innocently took a picture of his naked toddler to send it to the doctor. This is from Sunday's New York Times. The doctor asked him to. He said, oh, there's a problem. Here, take a picture. Send it to me. Cashmere Hill's excellent article. This happened in February of 2021. With help from the photos, the doctor diagnosed the issue, prescribed antibiotics. The kid was great, but 2 days later, Google killed his account, accusing him of child sexual abuse material, and referred him to the San Francisco Police Department. Now, the problem is this guy, by the way, ironically, the father, I will leave the name out, actually works in this field. He designs programs for detecting problematic material. He's a software engineer that does an automated tool for taking down video content flagged by users as problematic. He filed a form requesting review of Google's decision, explaining, well, there were pictures for the doctor. The problem is he took them on his Android phone, and the Android device uploaded it to Google Photos, where it was automatically scanned. But he lost not only his Gmail account, but he was a Google Fi user, so he lost his Google Fi account. He lost all the documents in Google Drive, including pictures and documentation of his son's first years of life. He had to get a new phone number, a new email. He had, and he couldn't, as a result, get the security codes he needed to sign into other internet accounts. So then, as a chain reaction, he's locked out of his digital life. San Francisco Police Department takes the case. And after an investigation, says, no problem, you didn't do anything wrong. There was no crime here. No crime occurred. This was December, by the way. Then now we're 10 months later. He received a manila envelope in the mail from the SFPD saying, you've been investigated. We served search warrants on Google and your internet service provider. We got your internet searches, your location history, your messages, any documents and photos he'd stored with Google. So they saw everything. They got everything. And they said, case closed. No crime occurred here. The father called the police officer, the police investigator, and said, can you help me get Google to give me back my account? You have to talk to Google, the officer said. There's nothing I can do. So Mark appealed to Google again. Gave the police report to Google saying no crime occurred after getting a notice 2 months ago that his account was permanently deleted. Google said no. He investigated suing them. He said, well, that's going to be too expensive. The irony is, this is the sad coda on the whole thing, the SFPD has all of his Google account information on a thumb drive because it was part of their search. He's trying to get a copy. Because Google won't give it to him. It's funny, we talked about this on Sunday on Twit, and I got the distinct impression that the panelists blamed the father. Like, you should have known better than to take this picture of your son naked. Your thoughts?
Did definitely stick all his digital eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
He snapped the photograph.
Well, wait, Mr. Jarvis. I mean, yeah.
I think the fault here is when government can't deal with questions at scale and deputizes private entities to do their work for them. Google's in a position here where, hey, you tell us to take down all child porn, we're not going to, there's no line there. We're taking down anything. A naked child, you know, napalm picture with Facebook, here, we're taking it down because liability, because the government made us do this and we're doing that. I just had a meeting of 25 internet researchers at the school, which was a great meeting. And they were talking about how what's going to happen now is that regulation is going to say to the platforms, you got to give your data to researchers. And the researchers are saying, whoa, there's not enough of us to protect the world. Once again, you've deputized somebody to do your work for you. And we've got to grapple with that, I think. And I think he has a right to get his account back. I think Google's doing the wrong thing here. But this is what happens when you have private entities become your cops.
I'm curious to know the timeline. When he snapped the photographs, how long was it before Google sent all this information to law enforcement and law enforcement got in contact with him? Just okay, so it was pretty quick. And then next, isn't this what was supposed to happen? I mean, this is a false positive, of course, but isn't this what's supposed to happen?
Well, that's the question.
Supposed to try to
is your family photos? This is what Apple got in so much trouble for. Remember, they were going to do this scanning.
Right.
And everybody got all
right.
upset.
Right, I forgot about that.
Apple, yeah. I should point out, still does it the way that Google does in the cloud. Apple was going to do it on your phone. But in any event, what is it any of their business what pictures I have on my phone or on my cloud.
I mean, it is their business because there is a documented harm and use of, you know, digital lockers to store images of child.
It's their servers, right? I mean,
yeah, it's so that makes sense. What the issue, I mean, to me, the issue here isn't that Google scanned it and flagged it. It's that this father had, you know, the police exonerated him and he doesn't have a recourse to get his information back or to get back on Google. And I think that is, to me, that's the big issue. It's, I mean, like taking pictures of kids' penises is a big deal and you shouldn't do it. And it doesn't make...
Even if you're doing it for the doctor?
Hold on. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. And it's reasonable for a company to flag that. And when you say, yeah, I took that because of, you know, I was taking a picture for the doctor, you explain the situation. But there's no way for him to explain it and get it. And Google simply doesn't care. It's not worth their time to hire someone to do that.
Yeah, but who's committing a crime here? Because the father took a picture of his son. But Google disseminated that picture all over the place. Google sent it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Google themselves looked at it. Nick Mick looked at it. The police department looked at it. They looked at everything he had. They went through his entire account.
Right.
Who disseminated that picture? Not the father.
Google did, but it did it based on the rules and mores that are in place right now for this.
They gave Google, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean... I think it's an eye-opening case in the sense that people are like, oh, crap, Google does that? Holy moly. But I don't think in this situation that it was wrong.
So did Photomat.
The wrongness.
In its day.
Right.
Photomat did the exact same
thing. So does Best Buy.
Kodak.
I mean, how many pedophiles had to get caught before they stopped taking their stuff up to the Geek Squad? Good Lord. I mean.
Google sent a response to Kashmir Hill, when she asked about this, it was kind of one of those no response.
Corporate responses.
Yeah, no response. Response. Let me see if I can.
What are the odds that Google is going to back down, given Kashmir Hill's
story? Well, there is an answer. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Google at some point then gives him back his account. But there, I think this is why you want end-to-end encryption. On the cloud.
And this is exactly why governments don't want it.
Google's statement is, in its entirety, child sexual abuse material is abhorrent, and we're committed to preventing the spread of it on our platforms.
So Priti Patel, who was the Home Secretary of the United Kingdom, just came out saying, Facebook, let's not go so quick into that end-to-end encryption you're doing after the abortion case, because that's going to affect us here. And we
so maybe, yeah, maybe the problem is not Google. The problem is government, which wants Google to be doing all of this stuff to be scanned.
Yes.
And doesn't want end-to-end encryption.
Or just recognize that this is the impact when you do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want us to prevent sexual abuse of minors. And when you say to them, okay, if we do this, that also means we have the ability to see if you're going to have an abortion. And if we share this with the police, then why wouldn't we share that with the police?
Well said.
Unintended consequences.
This is why I'm constantly like, when Jeff says moral panic, I roll my eyes, because you could have both sides. And we have to figure out, like, we have to create rules. Like, okay, if we say no encryption, then we have to say you can only get access to this data and see it in this case. Not whenever we feel like it's a good enough use case. We have to specify, okay, to prevent child sexual abuse by this method.
I also
And then everything else you can't get.
If you are an active child molester and you actively, you know, do this stuff, you probably are smart enough to encrypt it.
No.
A lot of tools... like a lot of tools,
again,
I think this catches the innocent more than it catches the guilty.
I think you're making an assumption. I mean, again, I will go back to people who brought their photos of preying on children to photo stores, like, you know, and those who left it on there.
I agree. And they had to learn, but I think they've learned.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think
there are those that do encrypt it, but there's plenty that don't. And there's plenty of like first time or casual user. I don't know. I'm not in the mind. But I think we don't have the data to say that that's true. So I would be very cautious about saying
I will give you some data. about this, that maybe, I don't know, maybe this says something. In 2021, one whole year, Google filed 600,000 reports of child abuse material and disabled the accounts of over 270,000 users.
Wow.
Were they child abusers?
Jeez.
Are there that many?
Bet most were. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of creepy ass old men out there.
So yeah, you think that of those 270,000 users, the majority, 90%, 80%, whatever, even if it's 50%, were actually criminally.
We would hear more. Cashmere Hill would have gotten more stories like this one
of the
Edge case.
Well, let's look at the number of sexual predators in the U.S. I mean, yes, that's a proxy, that it's a rough proxy, but what are those people called when you have to read offenders?
Sex offenders, yeah.
Of course, you're going to Google
750,000 registered sex offenders in the United States. There are approximately 250,000 convicted sex offenders under a criminal justice supervision in the. Oh, that's in this particular.
Okay, but that's total.
So 750,000 registered sex offenders in the United States.
Okay. That includes.
So if Google's catching 270,000 a year.
And then studies of victims have shown that less than 30% of sex crimes are reported to law enforcement. So to get registered, you have to be all the way to conviction. And we think about how many people are accused, at least. Mm. Okay.
Mm.
These are gross stats. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people. I mean, I was just thinking about, you know, 1 in 4, 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted. Again, not child predators, right. But that's, I mean, there's a lot of people out there doing really icky stuff.
What did the panel on Sunday think that he should have done?
Not taken the picture and not had his uploads turned on to Google.
You can't get the doctor, your kid's sick.
Yeah, it's just not very empathetic.
They thought he should have taken the picture.
This is the day and age, though, where teledoctor is normal now.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like an overreaction. It feels like the Stranger Danger overreaction we had 20 years ago that has kept our kids off the streets for the last 20 years.
Not mine. No. Better get outside, dadgummit. You're not going to sit in this house all day.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, I know they're not going to go to the bathroom because there is now a tool to monitor kids going government. To the bathroom in 1,000 American schools. It's called e-hall pass. And if your kid takes too long to poop, they're going to be in trouble. Let me tell you something. It's according to Vice, the system has some resemblance to the sort of worker monitoring carried out by Amazon. The Touché. Product is the co-founder and national director of the K-12 Security Information Exchange, a nonprofit focused on cybersecurity for schools, told Motherboard. The product is just the latest in a growing number of student surveillance tools designed to allow school administrators to monitor and control student behavior at scale on and off campus.
Here again, you lost my kid? Didn't you do anything to make sure you knew where my kid was?
Yeah. The program, e-hall pass, tracks how long, at what time, and how often each child goes to the restroom and stores that information on third-party servers run by a private for-profit company. Oh, man. Just imagine the stats they're generating.
It's kind of interesting because I saw someone talk about this and kind of other monitoring software for kids in schools as a way to deprofessionalize teaching and to make it very easy to scale monitoring children in school to a untrained person who could basically scan walks the halls.
You might make the argument now the teacher doesn't have to be a police officer. The teacher can teach, can focus on teaching.
All teachers have to be an authority figure.
Yeah. Students request to pass through the software and the teacher then approves it. The tool promises, quote, hall omniscience, with the ability to always know who has a pass and who doesn't without asking the student. The e-hall pass website explicitly talks about stopping meetups of students mentioning vandalism and TikTok challenges, which is the real problem in today's schools.
Yep. Yep. You know, but then there's also a flip side, a potential good flip side on this. And I hate bringing this up, but with all of this active shooting stuff, that's another data point that we can
have. We know where all the kids are. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
Just be the world we live in.
I'd feel better about it if they use that information to help the children, but, you know, that's not necessarily.
Yep.
Did you get any celebrity spam in your Facebook this morning?
What's Facebook?
I wouldn't have noticed.
Facebook. None of that. Yes, your dog did. Facebook users are reporting celebrity spam is flooding their feeds. Facebook says, earlier today, a configuration change caused some people to have trouble with their Facebook feed. We resolved the issue as quickly as possible. Hundreds of Facebook users reporting a strange glitch in which...
Hundreds? Oh, my God!
Their feeds show posts of people commenting on celebrity pages, even if they don't follow the person leaving the comment or the celebrity. All right. Yeah, I don't know how widespread it was. As of Wednesday
morning...
Somebody actually
wrote a story about this?
Well, wait a minute. Down Detector, which tracks all this stuff, reported thousands of issues related to Facebook. 81% of complaints related to the website's feed. 45% of users reported issues with the Facebook feed. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. We don't know. How could you ever know how many it is? It might be millions. Might be billions. We don't know.
Millions!
That's what I'm asking.
Celebrities! Too many celebrities!
Did you get celebrities in your feed? Facebook is offering apparently will be accepted, a $37.5 million settlement over tracking, like Google. This is a similar settlement with Google. Facebook continued to track user locations even after they switched off location services. When location data not available, the app used IP addresses to get a general location for the purpose of serving ads for local businesses. This violates California law as well as breaching the company's own privacy policy. So a preliminary settlement filed Monday in San Francisco federal court. Judge has still to approve it. $37.5 million. Take about a third off for the law firm divided by 3.5 billion users. You're going to get, I don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get a postage stamp in the mail. I don't know. I think even though you'll probably get very little, if anything, in the suit, it does probably have some effect on the behavior of these companies, I would hope. Just like complaining about the metaverse avatar of Mark Zuckerberg got him to redesign it. Did you see Mark so excited about Horizon Worlds? Major updates to Horizon and avatar graphics coming soon. This is the good one.
It's like, that's the new one, isn't it?
That's the good one. Oh, whoops. I'm sorry. That's the fixed one. Still looks pretty bad. The early one was even...
Does he have legs yet? Has he grown legs?
No, I don't know. I don't think they have legs. It did look a little bit... I can't find the original...
Well, if you look up... just do Zuck Ridiculous
I
video.
I know. There's a lot. But I do have this statuary from the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, LACMA, a piece in the Archive of the World Art and Imagination in Spanish America, 1500 to 1800 exhibit. A sculpture of the baby Jesus looks surprisingly like the baby Mark.
See, Zuckerberg is Jesus.
Zuckerberg is the Messiah. Jesus.
Oh, I'll bring this up for Jeff since he's a TikTok fan. Have you ever seen the TikTok account, Has This Artist Ever Seen a Baby?
Oh.
Yes. It's wonderful.
All right.
Yes.
Now
that feels like something, Has This Artist Ever Seen a Baby? Because that is a clear example of no.
Wait a minute. Let me turn off the audio. No. Turn off the audio, please. Has this artist. Oh,
what the heck? How did you get that, Leo?
It's the first thing that popped up. No, it's
what
the first
do you look
ever
at?
Seen.
Jesus.
Oh, there's
man.
Also, has this artist ever seen a cat? So after you've plumbed the depths of have this artist ever seen a baby?
Come on.
I guess there's more than one. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he does a series.
That's the account. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to watch it. I just was trying to relate to Jeff through throwing a TikTok reference.
Yes.
That's funny.
Here's a good one.
I don't know. What the heck?
Okay. I don't know. I'm sorry. Just
what account are you on?
You just don't know how to use TikTok.
How do you use this TikTok thing? Hello, TikTok. Play me a song.
There's a YouTube version too. So there you go.
We'll take it.
If you just Google, has this artist ever seen a baby?
Here's the before and after. There on the left, the original Mark. On the right, the new and improved Mark Zuckerberg.
Somewhat better, but
a little better.
He got more shaving.
He should just get a better haircut, and let's be honest about it. The Caesar cut is over, man.
Don't
YouTube,
tell my husband.
Rightly. Does he have a Caesar cut?
I don't know if it's a Caesar or not. It's cut pretty close to his head.
Does he have bangs?
I don't even know what a Caesar cut is.
It's the short bangs across the front.
I mean, maybe I can't.
Oh, it's not flattering to any head shape.
Well, it's better. I mean, I don't know.
No, I'm not talking about Andrew. I haven't seen a picture of him. I don't know what he looks like. I think your haircut's spectacular. How bad could his be? YouTube removes videos of Tesla fans.
There's Andrew.
That's not a Caesar. That's a nice haircut. Okay. What a good-looking fella. Doesn't look anything
I mean, I like him.
Doesn't look anything like Mark Zuckerberg. Not one bit.
Well, I just thought it was that close to the head haircut.
No. That's just a short haircut.
Well, now you're going to make her. She's going to go to all her friends and say, Do you think Andrew looks like Mark Zuckerberg?
More like this.
No. Hey.
YouTube removes video of Tesla fans using actual children.
Oh, geez.
To test whether the full self-driving software stops for children.
Following the commercial that we talked about last week.
Yeah, where they ran into mannequins, but don't use actual children. Okay, so some people are just, I'm sorry. Anything for reviews, I guess.
They were dumb before the internet.
That's right.
The internet did not make them dumb.
Here's a happy story. Wait a minute, let me find one.
It's National Waffle Day.
It's National Waffle Day.
There you go.
There's a new movie about the history of BlackBerry. I think this will be good. The story of doomed smartphone company, Jay Baruchel and Glenn Howerton.
Really?
Starring as Mike.
Movie?
Yeah, a movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's done. They're finishing up production, and I think it's going to show at the Toronto Film Festival soon.
Did Canada fund this movie?
Yeah, they should have.
Exactly.
Good
movie
cast.
About the Osborne One.
Good cast. It's wrapped production.
What is the drama in the BlackBerry story, though?
It failed.
It had
so much potential.
It still exists, serving up embedded software through QNX. It's in cars.
It is, although...
Yeah, that's right.
Although, it's not really about BlackBerry, the, you know, pivoted BlackBerry. It's about BlackBerry, the phone company. And, in fact, just this month, BlackBerry turned off the servers that would let any BlackBerry phone work. They no longer, no matter which BlackBerry you have, it no longer works.
BBS.
BlackBerry Pearl.
What was it? BBM? BlackBerry BBS. Messenger? Is that the thing?
Yeah, no, BBM.
No. Not just that. Your phone even won't work.
Wow.
I bought the life story of Adam Osborne. I'm going to do that.
That would be boring. The movie is based on a 2015 bestseller called, I think you might remember this, Losing the Signal. The untold story behind the extraordinary rise and spectacular fall of BlackBerry by two reporters at the Toronto Globe and Mail. It is a very Canadian story.
Canada content, man. You got to fill the airwaves with Canada content.
I do have a story. Normally this would be in the changelog, but I'm not going to put it in the changelog because I want Stacey to comment on it. Google has shut down its IoT core services.
We talked about this last week.
We talked about this last week.
Okay, never mind. Let's forget it.
I put it in the changelog last week. Okay. Which is where it belonged.
I guess we did talk about
it. Sorry, Liv. Thank you,
we talked
Bill,
about
for
it in Windows Weekly, and I thought, oh, I'll definitely ask Stacy about this, but forgetting that I had already definitely asked Stacy about it.
We have some stuff below the line you could talk about.
Stuck.
You could talk about the company that's going to make call center people sound more white American using AI.
What? There's more bad AI stuff in here?
Yes.
Hello, my name is Chad. I am in Bloomington, Indiana.
Watch it.
Can I help you?
Let's see if they can make me sound more American.
Oh, my.
Please.
They try
please,
to, when everybody's please. Having a proper fit about this, they try to argue that, no, this is going to create more job opportunities because, you know, the bigoted Americans will
well, it's complain. Really true. I mean, nobody wants to say it out loud, but I hear from people all the time saying, yeah, I got a customer service rep,
and they weren't American.
They weren't American.
That's normally what I've heard.
Honestly, customer service reps are bad no matter where they're coming from.
Well, it's not the reps, it's the ability.
They're not trained. They're given a notebook.
Well, they don't have the power either to solve a problem.
Yeah. We don't want to say accents are a problem because you have one, says President Marty Sarum. They're only a problem because they cause bias and they cause mis. I don't think they cause bias, but they are affected by bias.
Yes.
All right. A standard.
Do you cringe?
Sound.
Do any of you cringe when you have to call a customer service and it's someone that's not American? I presume no, because y'all are.
I always ask them, "Where are you? What's the weather like?" I talk to them.
I'm afraid they can't tell us though.
Well, I've never had anybody say I can't tell you.
Yeah, if they make something up, that's fine too. Yeah. I mean, people who are located here in the U.S. also have accents.
Yeah.
So,
No. It's a dumb prejudice. We all agree.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Do you know what a NIM cell is? A NIM
cell? Hey, watch
cell?
It, Leo.
You're a NIM cell, and you're a NIM cell, and you're a NIM cell. You're a niche internet micro celebrity, Taylor Lorenz.
I think I was more of a demi celebrity myself.
Not a micro. Taylor Lorenz's new neologism for niche celebrities. As online fame fragments, NIM cells represent a growing fraction of the attention economy, she writes in the Washington Post. When did she go to the Washington Post?
Oh, she went there some time ago. She gets nasty
There's
about the Times.
There's a cluster
she
about it,
yeah.
Yeah.
This is a picture of a NIM cell, in case you wondered what they look like. That's Bryce Woolman. I guess he's got he's a 6'6", 25-year-old operating nurse. It's his cult following online that's made him a breakout star. He tweets jokes and missives about life to his 5,000 followers from the handle The Big and Sexy 70. Talks about driving his Chevy Tahoe with a DVD player, often dresses in bright clothing. So 5,000 followers is a small follower count. But that's world, 5,000 people following you around every day, that'd be noticeable.
Yeah. You know what the average circulation of a daily newspaper in America was before the steam-powered press?
What?
4,000.
So there you go.
It was a Substack newsletter.
Yeah. Yep. So that's, I mean.
Are YouTubers considered this term, NIM cell?
Cells? I don't know what, I mean, I don't know if NIM cell is in widespread use. TikTok and YouTube stars count. I mean, Henry has
like
2.1 million followers, but I would say he's a NIM cell. I would
say. Right, because I can tell you right now, Mr. Report, I know Hank, and Hank is killing it. But I'm
Nobody
pretty
knows who he
sure
is.
My mom's has no idea who he is.
Right.
Right.
But to his fan base, they...
He's a celebrity.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
In fact, he recently...
Quit makes themselves.
He recently performed at Outside Lands, the big conference, the big music festival in...
He cooked at a music festival?
Yeah, look. Here's a picture.
Wow.
Of him performing at Outside Lands with his huge audience, watching him make sandwiches.
Oh, my. Oh, that's amazing.
So I guess that's more than a NIM cell. I don't know what that is.
Groupies.
That's, by the way, that's Phil Rosenthal from Somebody Feed Phil, who is like Somebody his MC, and his daughter Lily Rosenthal. He's making chopped cheese and chicken parm at Outside Lands.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's a pretty unusual DJ set.
Yeah.
It looks like it does look like a DJ, except he's got a induction burner instead of a turntable.
Yeah. No turntables.
Yeah. That's hysterical.
It's actually kind of cool how the like having induction burners.
Yeah. And,
because that like makes cooking
right. He can cook
much
anywhere.
More accessible. Portable. Like
yeah.
Yeah. You could plug it into your Tesla and bring it camping. I hadn't really thought about that, but I'm like, ooh.
He does it. He uses them all the time. Yeah. I think there might be video, too, of that.
I want to see the food.
I want to eat the food. Forget seeing it.
I found out that he's been cooking nearby, but not bringing me the leftovers. He brings it to a young... I told you this, a young lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Uh-huh.
A young lady.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, we eat salsa.
The way to a woman's heart is through her stomach.
All the time. Here we go. Here's a...
Mine too.
Here's a short of him.
Yeah.
Listen to that crowd cheering.
Hank the Tank.
Hank the Tank. He's cooking for him in the Gastro Magic stage.
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, well. Oh, that's this is somebody else's stuff. I hate this. This is the new YouTube Shorts. It's just like TikTok.
Yep.
Everything's just like TikTok.
I've been uploading.
Except YouTube podcasting.
Yeah,
is YouTube really going to really trying to promote podcasting?
Yeah, they have a podcast channel.
Yeah,
they're not promoting us.
No, they aren't.
No,
darn them.
I don't know what that even means. Nobody goes to YouTube for podcasts. Although NPR just put a ton of podcasts on YouTube, so I may be wrong on that.
Huh.
I have a Google photo question.
Yes.
Aunt or anyone. Sorry, I felt like we were devolving there, but I have a real question for people.
20 shows, including Up First and Throughline, are now available on the YouTube podcast channel from NPR.
Okay.
So that must be real.
You know how in the camera, Google will be like, okay, use portrait mode. And you're like, all right, fine, I'll use it. And you use it, and then it does this post-processing of whatever image you took. How can you make it not post-process?
There should be another image next to that one that's not processed that allows you to use either one in Google Photos.
All right. So if I see the photo and I go into this, is it this? No, because at the setting hamburger menu or the little menu dots, I got nothing. Man. And it's driving me nuts because like...
Let me test all myself. I do a portrait. Boy, yeah, this is fun podcasting. Portrait of myself.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You guys wanted to take over the show. I'm washing my hands of it.
No, I was like, this is a real question. I'm having nothing to do with this.
Wow. It didn't. Yeah, normally it's right next to it, or maybe it's under Google Photos, under that directory. Because I've seen it before. It gives you two options, where one is the process version and one is the standard snap.
I think it's taken away my standard because like I have all this hyperpigmentation and Google just loves to emphasize it when it comes into like...
You
it's
mean
like
freckles?
I look sort of normal, and then it's like
freckles. What's hyperpigmentation?
Did you just call freckles hyperpigmentation?
No, I have hyperpigmentation from I have melasma on my face.
Oh,
and so
I never see it. Do you cover
well,
it
see
up?
It, but I cover it some, but not. I don't want to wear a lot of makeup.
No, you look great. I don't. Huh.
Well, either way,
you mean like Michael
when
Jackson?
When I take a photo, it's not like vitiligo or something
like
that.
Vitiligo.
I do not see that in there like I used to. I just looked in all of these folders and it's not there. I wonder why they took that out.
Well then.
Because sometimes they will overdo it and have the depth of field off and, you know, it'll blur out part of your eye for some reason. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and it'll just get weird.
Yeah.
By the way, Stacey, I meant to tell you, you can probably trade in that Google Flip 3 for almost 100% credit for a Google Flip 4. Samsung Flip
Google?
4. Samsung. Samsung is being very generous with their trade-ins. So go look and see what you can get for the trade-in. And that way you could get the new Flip 4.
And the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
I know. Thanks, Uncle Leo.
Anyway, it's worth checking. I've seen people say, wow, I'm getting a huge amount for a trade-in. They do that when they announce new phones. Apparently selling very well, almost 1 million Galaxy Fold and Flip phones sold in the first day.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the phone. Them.
I know. It's great.
It works in my little delicate paws.
Yeah. I'm not crazy about the Fold. I think it's too big, but I thought the Flip was just right. And good reports on the Flip 4. You might want to do that upgrade because I guess the little screen on the front can run apps now. And so it can do a lot more stuff. And that's the Google change log.
It's not the change log.
Oh, crap. Oh, crap. Well,
your AI is not working very well.
Oh, dang, nab it. YouTube is getting split screen mode and shorts are coming to televisions. Page 2. Apple Music 4 for Android, now in beta, with iOS 16 features and Apple Classical mention. Page 3. YouTube.com podcast goes live as simple explore page. We already talked about that. And page 4, yep. Google Doc, Google Box.
Google Docs.
Google Box. Coaching Jumbo. Google Docs update. Helps everyone stay on task. I don't know.
Google Docs. I didn't say it was good stuff in the change log. I just said there was some things.
Google Docs has a new tasks feature, so you can rolling out August 17th. Those under scheduled release will see it on August 31st. So you can add to-dos. That's kind of cool. So that would be for a shared document where you want to delegate. You could add some things. Or if you're writing a report, you can put your deadlines in there. That's cool. Right there in the doc. And that's, believe it or not, the Google changelog.
Shortest changelog ever. Wow.
Man, was that good.
Wow.
I'm a part of history.
Did you see Instagram is now copying Be Real as well?
Allegedly.
Of course they are.
Working on it.
It's an internal prototype. But the same idea where you'll get a pop-up saying, okay, now take a picture of you and your surroundings, and it'll go on your Insta. It's so close to Be Real. It's like it's like they're not even pretending they're coming up with new features. Just copying them.
Once you got the audience, all you have to do is just copy the features you think they want.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed that Instagram, and I keep saying this, is no longer Instagram. But I guess it's doing well. It is very much like TikTok now. When you go to Instagram, you just you're looking, more videos.
Yep.
I've
complained about it in the past, but again, I'm someone that I don't just always shoot photographs, so I'll stick videos out there, and they definitely get more attention. I wish my photographs got more attention, but it is what it is. I just feel for the photographers that are out there that their focus is
giving my boyfriend's daughter's room.
I know that voice.
That's the TikTok voice. I was
the voice
going
that
to
I
pull
hate
up
so much.
This character. Oh, I got to do the puzzle piece. Hold on. Make sure I'm not a bot. Thank you.
Sure.
Yep. This guy, FN Mika. You want to see him?
Oh,
that's FN Mika, right? He is a virtual character on TikTok. Just signed a big record deal with Capitol Records. He has over 10 million followers on TikTok. Talk about an incel. I'm sorry, not incel. What is it?
He was just they canceled his contract.
What?
Nimcel.
They just canceled it?
Nimcel.
Yep.
Yeah, because he's a racist.
Oh, no.
Caricature.
So this story from August 12th. Is already out of date.
Way out of date. Yeah.
Yep. And now, right after that, I put that in there because right after that, Capitol came back and said, "Yeah, we're going to sever ties."
Oh.
With this.
Yes, I see. I saw the first one. I didn't see your follow up from Dadgum. Capitol Records server ties with AR rapper FN severs ties with AI rapper FN Mika apologizes to the black community. Great. You should have maybe looked a little closer. Capital to what he was doing.
But that's the thing.
Was he racist?
Okay. The FN stands for Factory New, which is a company, and it's basically a couple of white dudes working AI to create music. And they created some music that people apparently like. You got 10 million followers, and they did something right on that standpoint. But unfortunately, it used a lot of racial slurs and put some interesting graphics up that just...
Well, it's good I wasn't... I was stopped before playing his videos.
Yeah, it's pretty craptastic. But again, Capital was just trying to jump on the hot ticket and try to, you know, capitalize on it, no pun intended, because that's what they all do. My beef with this, and this was brought to my attention on Twitter, my lady name is Andrina, I believe that's how you say her name. She brought it to my attention, and I dug into it a little bit. But my problem is that AI had some data to scrape to figure out what it is that people are liking and willing to pay for. I don't like the fact that it's a couple of white guys throwing out a bunch of racial slurs, but I also don't like the fact that we have created the data that's got all of those racial slurs in it that made it acceptable to be played as records. You know, I know y'all have some white privilege, but I apparently have black privilege where I'm supposed to be able to throw around that N-word.
Right.
but not
white guys pretending to be black.
Have you ever heard me say that?
No.
And the thing is, you never hear me say it.
No.
I refuse to say that word.
Classy.
I don't give a crap about it being a term of endearment and things like that. So I'm not going to say it. So I have a problem with that being a part of the data that we put in there to allow it to be scraped, to be put out there in music and say, oh, okay, let's go ahead and capitalize off of it.
I don't think that FN Mika has 31 or whatever it is, 10 million followers because of the music as much as, like, I'm looking at these. They're just kind of they're typical TikTok videos, funny videos like a PS5 that turns out to be a coffee machine.
It's all brand, man.
Yeah.
Get you an album and build your TikTok army and have that TikTok army come after your music and your other art and just continue to grow. And that's what they did.
Would it have been different if it weren't white guys doing it?
For me, no. Because it's just not my thing.
Appropriation to say, well, I'm white, I'm going to appropriate black culture to make a lot of money on TikTok.
Yep. Right.
That's, you know, I'm not thrilled about that idea.
Yeah, I don't like either side of it. And someone, I believe it was the same person, they mentioned on Twitter, is like, well, Aunt, we know that you are a little bit more conservative than other black folks that we know. Well, yeah, because I'm not a conservative. No, I'm not a liberal. I'm right there in the middle of it. There's a couple stuff that both sides say that I totally disagree with, and there's things that they say that I do agree with. And on this one, I'm right in the middle of the road. I'm fine with AI being used to help make art better, but I'm not fine with this AI that is totally being racist and just putting this crap out. I'm not cool with that.
It's kind of humorous that Capitol Records paid so little attention. They just said, well, 10 million followers, sign them to a deal.
But that's the thing. That's the music industry, right? Yeah. It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Okay, so-and-so is hot. We don't know who they are, but people are listening. Let's get them before somebody else do so we can capitalize on it and make more money for ourselves. We don't give a damn what
he has a billion views on TikTok, or it has a billion views on TikTok. It's the number one, quote, virtual being on the platform. And his debut major label single, Florida Water, came out on
August 12th. Which features another rapper that is currently under investigation or even incarcerated because of racketeering.
Oh, great. Well. But the record companies don't care. If it sells records, they don't care.
That's the thing.
Yeah. All right, let's take a little tiny break because it is National Waffle Day. And when we come back,
not month. It's not a waffle month.
Well, let's check. Only
a day. Every day is National Waffle Day in the Higginbotham household.
It'd be good if it were National Stroopwafel Day. Actually, told us that? Oh, I see. In Denmark, they celebrate March 25th, but in the U.S., August 24th is National Waffle Day.
Woo-hoo.
Woo! I do like waffles. Belgium, Hong Kong, Stroopwafels, galettes.
I sense an International House of Pancakes conspiracy.
Oh. Let's see the history of National Waffle Day.
There's a Waffle House, Jeff.
Well, there is that. That's true.
Yes.
But I'm saying it's the
Waffle House.
It's the pancake people who are
screwing this up. Waffle Day is celebrated in several European countries on March 25th because it's the first day of spring, or roughly so.
I don't think of waffles as a spring food. Do you, Stacey?
Just,
I mean, I know every day, but
this is also international
season
strange. This is international strange.
Wait, a season?
This is international.
It's like a weekend breakfast.
International.
I'm sorry, are you trying to tell us something, Leo?
Nothing important. This is International Strange Music Day. Yeah. And National Danny Day.
Well, we did
day.
Just play F and Mika.
If your name is Danny, it's your day. Today. National
Daniel
Danny
know.
Day.
Only Danny.
Yeah.
We could do a John Cage rendition of Oh Danny Boy.
Danny Boy, the pipes. Oh, now. God. Now, after that fine break, we should get your thing of the week, Stacey Higginbotham.
So once again, actually, we did a post on the site on why there are no things of the week. There's just nothing interesting in the smart home. I'm
you
so
actually
sorry, y'all.
Felt so guilty that you wrote a blog post.
Kevin wrote the blog post. We were like, hey, do you want to review this? And I'm like, no. And basically, so... There it is. And a gratuitous
There's
Norm.
There's Norm. Norm.
Norm.
Norm.
Why the once exciting smart home is now boring. Can I tell you
basically,
a secret?
Basically, it's...
I've been bored by it for years.
Oh, hush. Anyway. But...
Here's a picture of his first smart home hub from 2010.
No, that's actually... Oh, that is his first smart home.
Boring even then.
One.
That's what the caption says.
Boring even then.
Yeah.
There's an Amazon Echo. Boring. And I even tried
this
to bring
This is where
up
it starts getting exciting.
What's and this?
So oh, we're basically,
ATAP.
Our thesis here is a device-centric smart home is boring,
yeah.
Right? The smart home is not device-centric. It's experience-centric. Anyway, that's not what I want to tell you about, though.
Please.
I have a thing for y'all. All right, y'all want an audiobook or do y'all want a books?
Any
Which
book.
One y'all want.
Any book could be good.
Either's fine.
Doesn't have to be audio. Could be any book.
All right. Well, I'm listening to the audiobook, so I'm going to, and I think it's a great audiobook, so I'm going to tell you it's Razorblade Tears by Simon Crosby. Is it Simon? No, Simon Crosby is one of my sources. Hold on. Let me tell you who made it.
This could be the next.
S.A. Cosby.
This could be the next Stacey's book club. We don't know.
It's not science fiction. Okay. This guy actually wrote one of my favorite books of last year. It was a heist set in the South. This one, Blacktop Wasteland. This, listening to this book, I am just like, my God, when are we going to get this as a movie? It is so good and so vivid, and I love it. It is the story, well, how would I describe it? It's two old men go searching for justice after their sons are murdered.
Are they named Leo and Jeff?
No, Isaiah and Derek. So it's a black man and a white man, both from...
Are they named Leo and
Ant? Both ex-cons. Nope.
Because I'd be interested in reading that book.
But it deals
keeps trying,
with...
She man. She you know. Persists.
I know.
Nevertheless. She persisted.
Anyway, it's great. It's got action. It's got... like reckoning over race, reckoning over like rights for gay people. It's got people coming to terms with who they are. It's got class. It's got how we treat ex-cons. It's just a great story.
Putting
I am loving
my
it.
My wish list, adding it to my wish list because I used up my credits yesterday, but unfortunately, but nice.
Yeah, you got Steve really, Gibson's yeah. book.
I did.
Recommendation.
That's how did you know? You're right. I got Steve. See, the problem is Steve gets a day jump on Twig, and I downloaded his book instead. I'm sorry. But I will put next month Razorblade Tears. The singularity.
I buy the extra.
Buy an extra credit?
Hardly anything. It's way less.
I know, but I already have two books a month. I can't read as many as I have. So.
Oh, should I re-show Will It Waffle since it is National Waffle Day like four
Will
or 5 years
it
ago?
Waffle.
I did. That was my thing for the last time we had Waffle Day on this show.
Oh, we've done this
before? Which is my waffle cookbook.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a waffle.
It's a great cookbook.
But is it like, does it try to waffle things that are not normally waffled?
Yes, and the waffle-able? Best recipe is hash browns. Ooh. With pepper and rosemary, and you pop that in the waffle iron. Oh, so yummy.
I have a underused waffle iron.
Oh my God, Willet Waffle
this.
Is the best. Have you not bought
calamari salad in a waffle iron? What?
Well, the iron is just a heater. It's just cooking.
It's just a grill.
Yeah. You know, I should probably make my grilled cheese in the waffle iron, shouldn't I?
Oh my God, you 100%
yeah,
should.
Yeah.
Yes.
Darn. Okay, good. Will it waffle? Yes, it will. 53 irresistible and unexpected recipes to make in a waffle iron. Now, Stacy, a point of order. I don't have one of them square waffle irons. I have a round Belgian waffle iron. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's what I
got. You're still going to be fine. Okay, it won't come out square. That's the information you need to know. Okay. And you know what? I'll throw out another thing. The little Dash mini waffle irons, also in honor of National Waffle Day. They're like $10. Get one. They're delightful. And then you can keep a little waffle batter in your fridge and just pour it out. Get yourself a little waffle and you can make a waffle sandwich with an egg in the morning.
You should put that so in your delicious. Office there.
Oh, and it comes in many colors. Aqua. Just colors, shapes. There's a bunny shape. Oh, you could have a skull-shaped waffle.
I see hearts.
I feel like if I had like a kid going away to college, I might get him this.
A pumpkin.
I don't think you're allowed to, Stacey.
Oh, you can have a waffle iron, surely.
Okay. I'd actually get my kid an induction burner, personally.
Yeah, that's safe.
All right. It is. When you don't have something on it, it's all, I mean, it turns
off. So when
off.
You say
it's
mini.
Much safer than a hot plate.
These are mini. They're 4 inches. They're teensy.
Yeah, they're this
teeny weeny.
Teeny weeny. You could make Stroop waffles.
They're not this size. They're smaller.
Oh, my God. Lego that Eggo.
And there's the thumbnail.
Oh yeah. So Razor Blade Tears, a hardcover or novel rather, on Amazon or Audible. Will It Waffle, a waffle cookbook. And the little mini waffle irons.
There you go. Sorry, y'all. I just got so enthusiastic about Waffle Day.
It's Waffle Day.
I respect that.
Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
Well, I want to mention just quickly that Crikey, which is a wonderful news site in Australia, said that the Murdochs were unindicted co-conspirators to Trump in January 6th, and Lachlan Murdoch threatened to sue them. It went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and finally Crikey did a quarter-page ad in the New York Times saying, come after us, and indeed he did. He's suing, Lachlan Murdoch is suing Crikey, because Crikey said that the Murdochs were an unindicted co-conspirator. I'm not going to go to Australia because now I'll get sued for repeating this.
Crikey, so in the U.S., of course, they'd be in the clear.
But it's the problem is the Australian libel laws are off.
It's Australian, and so they may in fact be liable.
But they're going to fight it. And well, they should. Peter Frey, who is the editor, is very good. So I wanted to mention that.
It's also a great name for a newspaper.
It Crikey. Really is. Perfect.
Crikey.
Crikey, mate. Ben Evans had some fun with the fact that the New York Times did a blog post on explaining how they use AI to get you to subscribe. This is the same newspaper that, of course, decries using dark methods.
Dark methods.
To get you to do things.
At the subscription funnel.
Oh, I hate seeing slides of funnels. Oh, God. I've seen so many. And then finally, according to Nielsen, for the first time, streaming usage has surpassed both broadcast and cable.
Isn't that interesting?
It's a streaming world.
Yep. The largest, and Netflix number one by far. Which is interesting. Then YouTube, Hulu, Prime, Disney, and HBO Max. Netflix has 8% of the market, HBO Max 1%. And then there are a lot of little other guys to make up 10%. So that I thought was very interesting.
Well, Mr. Jarvis, I know this is the picks of the week and stuff, but we sort of saw this coming, but was there anything the cable companies could have done to prevent this? I don't think so.
No, I mean they have their own streaming channels, so you got HBO Max versus that, but it's really, you know, cord cutting and all that. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, this is the way things are going.
The progression. Yeah. But streaming is a pain in the butt.
Do your boys
How so? How's it a pain? You literally pick up.
I'm an old guy, and I get out the clicker. I get out my clicker here, and I'm so amazing. It doesn't have a wire anymore.
What's on channel 4?
Oh, you're watching your TV on a TV.
Yeah,
don't watch it on a TV. Watch it on an iPad.
A little market research. Aunt, do your boys, what do they, watch primarily? YouTube, I'm going to guess?
Yes. YouTube, YouTube, and the popular service of Disney Plus.
Oh, it's interesting.
Those are the things. Because they dig Marvel and stuff. They dig all of those little different series.
But they don't watch broadcast television.
Not often. No. Only if they catch the parents watching reruns of something or other. But most of the time, they're watching a streaming service like Disney Plus or YouTube.
Yeah, you know what my kid said about broadcast television?
What?
I feel so sorry for my friends who have TV. They have to watch what's on when it's on.
Yeah, but and even with that said, Miss Stacy, even I don't watch broadcasts unless it's. I go to Hulu to watch reruns of old shows. I'm not even watching it live, and the only time I'm watching it live is this weekend with football season.
I never watch it, and don't forget, I am a former TV critic. And
I heard.
Yeah. And that's how some of it's just so off. That's how I ended up seeing TMZ on Richard Simmons. An hour of that. Yeah. Broadcast TV has just gone to the dregs. It's nothing on it anymore.
There is an assumption, though, that you have high-speed internet.
Okay.
You're not going to watch streaming if you don't have high-speed internet. What is the penetration of high-speed internet in the U.S., I wonder?
Oh, is it, that's a question.
What is, here we go. Well, this is from, let's see.
Well, you can also watch it on your phone. Don't forget, you got the phone companies are saying certain services are included.
Watching on the phone isn't very satisfying, though, is it?
Nope, but everything is pushing us to create content for people to watch on the phones. Remember Quibi?
Yeah, I like watching stuff on my phone. I like watching stuff on the iPad. We only have one TV, and we only watch it we watch The Sandman and... That's only because my daughter and I were watching it together.
Yeah.
No, if it's just us watching
it. Here's an interesting picture. This is from last year, Apple Insider. Those blue counties are areas where fewer than 15% of the people are using the internet at 25 megabits or better.
Some of those places, though, only have like 6 people.
Yeah. They're rural. Mostly rural counties, absolutely. Although much of Alaska. So the percentage of people using the internet 25 megabits or above per county, less than 15% have broadband in the blue counties. In the gray counties, it's more than 15%. I'd like to see some other stats. But the blue counties here aren't watching streaming, I can tell you that. 85% of the people in these counties don't have enough internet.
Yeah,
bandwidth to watch streaming.
They're just waiting on football season every day.
They have enough to watch it on their phone, just not on their television.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you're that rural, you may not have, you may not even have high-speed telephone. Anyway, Aunt Pruitt has a need. He has a need for something.
I needed laughs these last couple of days.
You.
And I got some. The first one comes from... Actually, we just mentioned her regarding that FN Mecca Twitter thing, but I wanted to put this out here for you because she had that same drone that you bought that I tried to tell you not to buy.
You did try. You tried hard.
I follow Adriana. I really like her. In fact, she was the person who kind of introduced me to Black Twitter. I asked her, who should I follow? Yeah. And she told me who to follow. She's great.
That thread, though, she shares the thread of using that Pixie drone, and it was such a great experience, and they pretty much should have made her an affiliate.
She said, I disobeyed your really product warnings, and let me tell you, is exactly the disaster your product managers figured it would be. Is this going to be a Pixie drone example here? Let's see.
And that's fine. and that's fine.
That's what it's supposed to do.
But further down in that thread, there's an interesting incident which there are no pictures, but the pixie drone gets stuck in someone's hair.
That's not good. Oh, look at this. This is the orbit.
See, that looks great.
That's the orbit. It goes
and
around.
It wasn't just anyone's hair. It was a very fancy person.
Well, it wasn't Adriana's hair. I could tell you that. Let's go down and see. There's no pictures of that. So she's using it a lot. Yeah. I'm going to bring mine in next time. It's just sitting on my desk.
Yeah.
This is the discontinued selfie drone that I bought for fairly significant expense. It looks like she's getting the value out of it.
She did pretty well with it. But again, at the very end, she talks about, whoops, this thing ended up in someone's hair, like literally tangled. Like, that's holy crap, I can't get this out. I can't get this out of her hair.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't do it in a large group of people. You'd do it somewhere where, because the drone is going to run into people and propellers got wrapped up in her hair in knots.
I should laugh.
It's going to hit this guy. Watch out. Watch out. No. Oh, that's it. That's it. She wasn't paying attention. She walked right into the thing. But this is, you know what, Adriana? You probably shouldn't be using it at an event with people wandering around, right?
Especially old people.
Well, look, watch. Here comes the guy. She's looking at the guy. Here comes the drone aimed right for her. Oh.
Oh, look.
Oh. Ow. Her name was Kelly. She was incredibly patient as I attempted to disentangle the pixie propellers from her hair with the least amount of hair breakage. Mm. The friend was a lot less patient, said, you just have to break it, and snapped one of the propeller guards right off the pixie.
Yeah. Just wrong.
If you ask me, I think she wanted to break it because she said, this is a really dangerous thing to be using in a place with this many people. But I guess I don't have to tell you that now. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, that woman sounded like a piece of work.
Little belligerent. Little belligerent.
I love that thread. That thread made my day.
Wow. 31 tweet thread by Adriana Langston. Nice.
But absolute classic. It's a good thread. Don't let the 31 tweets fool you. Yeah, it's worth
it. It's an absolute classic.
It's very funny.
Yeah. It's a gem.
Yeah.
And she's great. I follow her on Twitter, too. And
yeah, I love her. And she's always tweeting at us, saying stuff. Mm-hmm. Yep. You said you had something else that would make you smile?
Yeah, number two is one of my favorite comedians, Mr. Alonzo Bowden. If you skip to 37:58.
I love Alonzo Bowden.
This bit is just this wasn't televised. This was just done strictly for YouTube. And
turn up my sound if you would. Or no, I turned it off. Never mind. sorry. Here we go.
Talk show on average, women use three times as many words a day as men. A day, because women speak in detail, and it's three times as many words a day. So what about a week, month, year, or years? There are men who've been married in excess of 20 years. How many words have they had to listen to? It's mind-boggling. And you could tell the old veterans because they have a filter built in and they don't listen to all the words. They only hear their assignment. She'll just be talking, grocery store, milk, cereal, gas, and he's like, I'm gonna go to the grocery store and get some cereal and milk. On the way back, I'm gonna get gas in the car. And she's like, I'm glad you were listening. He's like, oh, yeah, I was listening.
That's so true.
I totally do that.
I live that Lisa. Every day. Every day.
Every day. So does Andrew, I hear.
Andrew speaks more than I do.
That's interesting.
If we asked Andrew that, would he say that's true?
He probably would. I mean, they're like at like Wednesdays after I've talked to y'all all day. That's
you have
my
nothing
quota.
To say.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I go and read a book.
That's my excuse too. Is that, well, honey, I've been talking all day. I don't want to talk anymore. I don't. He's pretty accurate. I'll just say that I don't mind it. It's a fact.
One more thing. I just thought about this, Mr. Jarvis. I've been watching musicals here recently.
What?
Oh no.
What?
One in particular, I just stuck it in IRC and in our Discord.
Yeah.
I've been watching that one in particular
because somebody has now been nabbed as Sandy Cheeks.
He's going to be in Sun. He or she?
She.
Oh, Queen Pruitt is going to be in a play?
Whoa. Yes.
She's going to be Sandy Cheeks in the SpongeBob musical.
Yes, I love that it. Is correct.
This I, is justice. This is
I don't share a lot of personal private stuff because the whole world ain't got to know, but this was pretty big. I'm quite proud of her.
Is she excited?
She's always wanted to get into
acting. She's going to do so well.
Does she sing?
Yes, she can sing.
We're going to see this. Well, the whole company's coming to see this.
Yeah, so this she just got the call a couple hours ago. Actually, it was right before the show. She got the call that she was in, and she's sort of been on her grind trying to work on this craft because she's like, I should act. I should be an actress, and said, hey, well, get to work, do the work, and she has. And she had the option for two different plays, actually, and that one is
SpongeBob?
The one she wanted the most.
Okay.
A musical.
And it's a daggum musical.
You're going to be singing cat songs before we know it.
Santa Rosa Junior College Theater Arts, November 18th through December 4th. Everybody needs to come to Sonoma County to see SpongeBob the Musical featuring Queen Pruitt as Sandy Cheeks.
Sandy Cheeks.
All of Bikini Bottom is going to celebrate.
She told me about this. Congrats for me. That's so great. She's like, well,
she's gonna do
I know you don't
job.
Like musicals, but you'd have to go. And I'm like, yeah, I know.
Oh, forget. She's going to be rehearsing all around the house for the next three months.
Oh, dude, you don't know. I've been watching this musical for the last 3 days, whether I wanted to or not. Son of a mother.
We got a new show for you. We call it Host. Hands-on show tunes. You're going to be the host of Host. It's going to be so exciting.
Nope.
Memories. Actually, Leo and I will come along and sing our favorite songs. How's that, Leo?
Nope.
A knight to the table round should be invincible.
Oh, gosh. But, yeah, she got fitted. What was Leo? The costumes and all that stuff.
Why don't you reprise your performance from before the show went on, please?
I was just doing, c'est moi,
tis I, I'm far too noob.
Jammer B, please kill the TriCaster, now.
I wonder.
He was doing Camelot. No, do Camelot.
That's from Camelot. I was doing Lancelot. Doing the Robert Goulet thing. But before that, I was doing I Wonder What the King Is Doing Tonight. I was doing the Richard Burton thing. And I'll save that for another day.
I will keep everyone posted
on that in her journeys and so forth. So I'll let you all know how it all goes and whatnot. She's pretty pumped. I think she's going to do well. She's pretty much knows all the songs and lines already, even though they haven't had rehearsal.
This is exciting. But, that's great. You know. That's a big part. That's one of the one of the big characters in Bikini Bottom. SpongeBob, Patrick, Sandy, and Squidward. There's the big four right there. I can't wait.
Cool Breeze and IRC. Ant's expression is priceless. He seems totally worn over the thought of SpongeBob.
Oh, yeah.
You nailed it.
It's true. It's the God's truth. That's Ant Pruitt, hands-on photography. Very exciting, interesting, controversial episode this week. All about Annie Leibovitz. That'll be very interesting. Of course, he's our community manager in the Club Twit. And tomorrow morning at the ungodly hour of 9 a.m.
9 a.m. is not early, dude.
On your day off. It's Leo's
on my day
off.
Aunt Stacy and
I. On my day off, I'm up at 6 and walking.
We'll be discussing Clara and the Sun. I still have 6 hours to go, so I'm going to be really tired because I'm going to have to stay up all night reading this damn thing. But it is actually a great book. We'll discuss it and the book club. And if you're not there at 9 a.m. because you're sleeping like a normal human, it'll be on demand also on the Twit Plus feed.
Yeah,
I love this book club, though, Stacey. Thank you for letting me come. I'm kind of horning in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, if you keep complaining, I'm just going to say no. Yeah. We don't want to do it.
2 p.m. like a normal thing.
No complainers.
All right. I love it. 9 a.m. going to get up bright and early.
I've got some good books. I've got some good books for the next one,
good.
Too.
So. Yeah, I love your recommendations. So that's for Club Twit members, of course, twit.tv/clubtwit, $7 a month. It's month to month, so you know you could just buy it once if you want to just do that. But please, please don't join it. I'm going to bring some waffles. That's what I'll do. I'll bring waffles tomorrow. That'll keep me up. Yeah. Then I'll go into diabetic shock, and that'll be the end of the show. I'm going to zoom in. I'm not coming in. No, I'm zooming in with my waffler. Stacey Higginbotham.
It is PJs. Will you be in your PJs?
Dude, his hair wasn't even brushed the last time.
Last time it was a bit rough. We don't judge, but it was not the polished Leo you see right here.
His hair was all over his head. His glasses were crooked. I mean, boy, he haggard.
All right, I'm gonna up my game tomorrow. Look a little better tomorrow. Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com is her website. Subscribe to the free newsletter. Check out the events. And, of course, you must listen every week to this IoT podcast that Stacey does with Kevin Toefel. And it's not boring, even though it's honest. It's not. It's a great show. It's fascinating. Thank you, Stacey. Jeff Jarvis, he is the director of the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And BuzzMachine.com, a good friend, thank you very much. Google shareholder, former TV Guide critic. Frank Sinatra called him a bum. Ray Kroc called him a nickel millionaire. Murphy Brown called him a bottomless pit of hate. Formerly one of San Francisco's 100 most eligible bachelors. He used to live in tomato fields. He is a human DDoS and the El Jefe to Taco Bell. Does not take criticism well. Is trapped in the jungle gym of life. He's an online man, a certified big guy disaster in the grocery store. The author of All About Email. All About Andre's Email of the Week in November 23rd, 2021. Almost a Jersey Mall mogul, former cover boy for your favorite pizza menu, Mr. Jeff.
Oh, dude.
Is that all laminated?
It's all laminated, baby.
Can't escape that.
Wow. All laminated.
What did you add on? You added on something there?
Pizza menu cover boy was added on.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, good.
The last minute. Well, as you tell us more about your CV.
I tell you more things about my fascinating life.
We add them to the end of the... And once you laminate it, it's just kind of hard. So we just kind of have to write it in.
Sharpie.
We do Twig every Wednesday, round about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You can watch it live at live.twit.tv or listen live. There's a live stream for audio and video. You can also chat with us at irc.twit.tv if you're a club member. Of course, the Discord is also a good place to go for chatting. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show are available at the website twit.tv/twig. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to it. And you can, of course, subscribe in your favorite podcast client, and that way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. And if you do have a podcast client that allows you to leave reviews, please give us a 5-star review. That would be much appreciated. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com. In our new This Week in Space podcast, every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.